This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca.
This ain't right.
You don't like this?
Just ain't right. We deserve better than this.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Jim, Troy, and Brandon. What is this? This is
just like the quintessential 80s song with the side dancing thing.
How does it feel? How do you feel? How does it feel?
It's messed up.
I don't know.
Let's stop that.
Welcome to the Big Show, everybody. We have lots to talk to today. Clouds are looming right now. If you're just waking and joining us, it's supposed to rain today throughout the day, and it looks like it's about to start any minute, so we'll keep you up to date on that. We'll check in with Winnipeg Jets at development camp. Kyle Connor, front and center yesterday, talking about his year, his first year in pro and what he learned. Started with the Jets, went down, came back, finished the season. We'll get into development camp. We'll get into Jets free agency. We'll start looking at not only the Jets free agency, but free agency overall as the period to sort of woo players and discuss things with them is well underway. Might have come and gone for most players. We'll see where some of the reports are, where some players may be interested or may be going. That should be fun. Winnipeg Blue Bombers, of course, back at practice yesterday. We're going to hear from Matt Nichols, the quarterback, as they prepare to go to Regina on Saturday. Full Blue Bomber game day coverage here on Saturday, as well as free agency coverage with Joel Marcoux and our very own Rick Ralph. Both those gentlemen, 10 till 2. On the latest that goes on, not only with the Jets, but around the league. Lots to get to today, and of course, an hour of your phone calls at 9 o'clock. Gentlemen, how are we today?
Are you guys messing with me, man? As soon as I walked in here, something just smelled. It smells nice, like pretty nice. You know, like walking down the grocery aisle at a grocery store or something, and you pass by a lady who has something real pretty, like a scent to her. That's what it smells like. I wonder if you guys did something on my chair or you sprayed something over. You guys messing with me?
No, I slept in a bed of lilacs last night, so I'm...
I showered.
Okay, well, something...
And I shaved.
Something is a fantastic treat from the scent thing going on in here. I had a lot of fun last night, boys. Sean Chornley puts on these events that are just fantastic. Brian Trottier is in town. And has a golf tournament going on today. Peter Janakis hosted the event at the Pony Corral last night. Rick Ralph was there emceeing it, and it was so much fun. Like a bunch of the old boys there to be able to hang out and talk with Ab McDonald a little bit and Billy Lazuk, of course, from Jets 1.0. And before that, and Ab McDonald got into some of the old cool Montreal Canadiens stories and, you know, talking about Glenn Hall and stuff, playing without a mask. And Peter Young was there as well, helping to ask these questions and talking with guys like Eric Fares here for it, and Russ Romanuk and Mike Ford, Jamie Leach, a bunch of cool cats, Aaron Asham, just hanging out and chatting, having a bunch of fun getting ready for the tournament today out at Kingswood. So it's going to be a bunch of fun. It was a lot of fun. And the food, oh, guys, the mountains of pulled pork and the Greek chicken that they served, I wish I could have grabbed a whole bunch of it and brought it in for you guys today.
Well, that would have been nice.
But you didn't, did you?
I ate my fair share. I did. Yeah, I did the old eat a lot, but man, it was so good.
Excellent. Very happy for you. Outstanding. always good to see guys like that. Ab McDonald is a straight up beauty.
He's an absolute,
like, just
he's
a true,
such a
pure
wonderful
gentleman.
Man, too. Huh?
Yeah. Just, and every time you see him and the stories and. Yeah. All that, so that should be a great event. I'm supposed to be in a golf tournament today too, and I'm now wondering if it's. Are you going rain or shine? Is that the?
Oh yeah,
I always go rain or shine.
Yeah,
I love it, but
I hate it. I don't like. I'm made out of sugar. When it comes to any other sport, I'm a mutter, but for golf, I am not. If it's raining, I'm just not happy. Not happy at all. I don't really have the appropriate rain gear either. Right. So if you're not dry, sitting around driving in the cart for 4 hours, it gets a little bit. You get a little snarly in those situations.
So, yeah, you're always the MC at the British Open is what you're saying.
Yeah. I'm going to the Diamond in the Rough, the fifth annual nine-hole golf event in support of the Pan Am Clinic Foundation out at Glendale, our home course.
So. That's a great nine-hole. Like Wicks and I try and get in nine every week. And that is, I was talking to someone yesterday about it. And maybe it was Ab McDonald and just said, you know, I don't have really – you need to be time rich to golf, really,
yeah.
5-6 hours and just don't have that kind of time. But for a couple hours, get out and do nine. That's a great idea to have a tournament that's 9 holes.
I was golfing Monday with some veterans of our industry, and they were saying that golf should be about 14, 15 holes. By the 15th holes, we're starting to you know, the shots.
Those guys are just running out of jam, right? Like horses dying down the stretch of a race is too long.
This is why I feel bad, because I may have a few years, but I was like, oh, I'm with you guys. 14 holes would be, it was a long day. But I get up really early, as we all do. Let's move on. Lots to get to, of course. And 7 o'clock, we're going to delve into free agency. And I'm going to run some comments from Mark Mathot, who is on our sister station in Ottawa, TSN 1200, talking about going to Dallas for a pick. I know it's a high second round pick, but it's in 2020. And it just seemed around the expansion draft he would sort of garner some more attention. We're going to get in Jets development camp and hear from Matt Nichols in this hour as well. But the comment that we'll run and then discuss extensively stood out that, you know, he fully admitted he did hear from other teams. And he sort of brought the perspective of, after 10 years in the league, I deserve this no move. I'm glad I had it, because I feel that I've put my time in and I didn't want to leave Ottawa. I'm from Ottawa. I didn't want to go anywhere. So if I'm going to be forced to, and after this many years of service, I should have the right to have at least a say in where I go. And that's how he defended the 10 team. I don't want
to
go there.
Man, do I disagree with that? That's almost funny to me. I mean, how much more of an entitled athlete could you be? I deserve this to decide where I go. Holy cripe. It's unbelievable. It's, and what a contrast listening to Trotche tell his stories last night about the Islanders teams and, you know, how they were able to stay together. What, they didn't. Couldn't be a UFA. They didn't exist. You couldn't be unrestricted and a free agent and anything like that. You were just owned, right? More or less. That's just funny to me, man. And it's such a luxury that the NHL players have, so many of them have, as a part of their contract. But to say that you have the right to it and that you deserve it, holy smackers. I mean, he's got it, so I guess within the framework of the way the NHL works, but I so completely disagree with it existing from almost an integrity standpoint of keeping a league healthy and well the way it should be. I just can't stand these no move and no trade clauses.
It seems to be getting worse, too, because when you combine the no trades with free agency, you know, if a team really wants a guy, that's almost the only way they can get them to add that sweetener of that no trade or that no move on top of it. And then when you get to things like the deadline or the draft and things like that, it makes movement just really stagnant. And I mean, you just kind of wonder in the next CBA if that's something the league even tries to go after.
Boy, that would be a nuclear war to take on the players for that one, brother.
Yeah, I mean, you're still getting your guaranteed contract, though. Right, like you're not losing a cent of your
preaching
salary.
Preaching to the choir here, man.
So like, it's not like you're taking. I think when you're not taking money away from the players, like maybe you got a bit of a fighting chance. But I wonder how
currency,
hard they'll
right?
fight for that.
Yeah, people say that is a currency now.
Yeah,
like the no move and clauses, no trade. That is currency. So it is kind of like taking money away in a way.
How about we'll give you the Olympics, give us the no trade.
I'm down with that.
Well,
I don't think it happens.
Mark Mathot is a prime example of why I'm torn on the no trade, because he didn't want to leave Ottawa. Ottawa wants to get rid of him. I understand that part of the business. That's where it goes. He's been there for 10 years. Expansion isn't his problem. I don't know. It goes back and forth, I guess. Like, it goes back to the history of it, I guess, and how it first came up. And it first came up as, like, you know, bona fide superstars, and we've talked about this. And, you know, it was an indication that we're all in with this guy, and this guy's to build fan loyalty was one of the reasons I think it was handed out. Not the reason, I understand that. But you don't think a guy with 10 years service?
I don't think anybody deserves a JT. I don't care who the hell you are. At the very most, some wild, rare exceptions, a la the Howes and the WHA days, we're a package. The three of us, super rare occasions, yeah, I can understand it. But for it to be as prevalent as it is right now, I absolutely detest them. From an open market standpoint of fairness for all of the teams that exist, within a league that has a common goal to help make each organization as strong and as fluid as possible, to me it just stifles and chokes out situations, especially small markets, a la like the one we've got here in Winnipeg. I hate them. I hate the notion that they exist. And I would feel the same way if I was sitting in New York or if I was sitting in Winnipeg. From an overall health standpoint from a league, can't stand it. It's the same to me. There's a same sort of cannibalism to the overall health of a league that exists with those types of clauses that would exist with no salary cap to me, where you just have the big bully markets can devour the smaller markets and that whole thing, the way that exists. And I know that it does exist in baseball and they seem to do okay with it, but I don't, you know, the parity thing, I think leagues should strive to achieve parity as much as possible, and eliminating things like no move clauses and no trade clauses is a step in that direction.
You agree with that?
Yeah. No, I basically echoed that earlier, where if you could somehow work that out in the next CBA, I don't know how that doesn't benefit the league in any way. Like I don't really see a negative or a downside to any of that, because like the team still have control of the player during their contract. It's not like the player can dictate, well, I don't have a no move, so I'm going here now, and you have to move me this second. Well, no, that's not how it works, right? So as long as the small market teams can control their players somewhat, the ones that they draft and that they develop and that they groom and grow, then I don't see a big issue with it. Or even if you could just limit it somehow to one a team. Like the amount of players, and you look at them, and every team has at least three or four of these guys, and there's no way that they're deserving of this sort of thing. Like in the NFL, they have the franchise tag at least. So I don't know how you could work that around in the NHL. I know the franchise tag isn't a no-move sort of thing, but if you could have maybe some kind of a designation of, okay, well, if we're Edmonton, Connor McDavid's not going anywhere. If we're Pittsburgh, we're not moving Sidney Crosby, that sort of thing. But I don't know how willing the players will be to negotiate that one. Like, I don't know if the owners will have some kind of a chip that they could toss their way to make this a little more exciting when it comes to the trade market.
So, and the other side of this, gentlemen, is the guys that were getting traded five times in a year. And the guys that were, you know, like Mathot's a prime example. He's picked up by Vegas. Maybe 2 days later, does he go there and start looking for a place because him and his wife are July 1st going to Europe for 3 weeks. And they got to solidify something. They go there, and then 5 days later, he's now a Dallas Star. And that was one of the arguments of the PA, that they said these are needed and at least should be an option. Now, they didn't have to be given them. There wasn't a rule that said they had to be handed out like candy. But there was the whole market of an idea of a guy that, I forget who it was, but the PA had a real stickler. There was a guy that was unmoved, I think, four times in 5 months or something.
I have zero sympathy for that. You're playing professional hockey, and you want me to cry because the dude's got to pack up and move a few times. One wild aberration or a strange occurrence like that, or certainly an uncommon type of a thing. And if it does happen, you're still playing professional hockey. So No, I zero sympathy towards it. I can't stand them. I have zero use for them. They should not exist to me to any degree whatsoever.
Interesting. We'll hear from Mark Mathot at the top of the hour, get into some free agent comments as well, and much more stuff around the Jets development camp and hockey. But Matt Nichols, we'll hear from him at the bottom of the hour today at 6:30. But we'll talk about some more rumors going around for defensemen and some more hockey when we come back on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290, proud to be a media sponsor of the upcoming 2017 Canada Summer Games, July 28th to August 13th in our city, as 16 sports and over 250 events will be featured during the 50th anniversary of the Canada Summer Games, and it'll welcome over 20,000 visitors. Help paint the town red, yellow, and orange every Friday until July 21st, wear your official 2017 Canada Summer Games clothing. Take a picture of yourself and share the photo while using the handle at 2017 Canada Games. and the hashtag gear up for a chance to win a Via Rail promotional travel credit. Visit canadagames.ca/2017 for more information about Game Gear Fridays. And you can also get information on the opening and closing ceremonies and many of the events that will be going on in and around the Canada Games. And tickets for both the opening and closing ceremonies are on sale now at ticketmaster.ca. The Big Show, Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rowicki. And we're going to hear from Matt Nichols, quarterback of the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, as they gear up for their season opener this Saturday in Regina. Elliot Friedman, always a must-read, I feel, every week with his 30 thoughts. And they included, of course, everything that's going to be going in and around free agency. One of the notes he makes is the goalie market. There's a lot of expectation of Ryan Miller to Anaheim for approximately $1 million, although I'm not sure if bonuses will be added to that. Elliot then continues to write and makes a lot of sense. Winnipeg has Eric Comrie in the American Hockey League, but the Jets are looking for a veteran to pair with Connor Hellebuck, which indicates Brian Elliott or Steve Mason. We talked about that yesterday on the show and Monday on the show. Is there a chance Mason comes here?
Well, he's got to go somewhere, and it's hey, man, anytime you hear Elliot Friedman say it looks like Elliot or Mason to the Jets, that's just sort of positive there, right? But you do know that Mason is looking to carry the mail a little bit more than a guy like Elliot at this point in time, too. So that's a little bit interesting, that dynamic. And maybe that's why you asked the question, because it would just appear that Mason is looking to be more of a workhorse kind of guy, play much more so. Like, and to be honest, is probably more in a position to steal the starting job away from Hellebuck. But either of those two guys come here, I'm going to be pretty happy. I would be more excited to hear Steve Mason, but I do think it's less likely.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly a plausible option, because you just look around the NHL right now and look at the goalie options that are out there for a guy that wants to be a full-fledged starter. And they're not there. They're not available right now. Unless somebody gets hurt at some point in time, the real only options for a guy like Steve Mason are Winnipeg, Vancouver, and Philly. And it sounds like the bridge has been burned in Philadelphia. Like, it doesn't seem likely that he would go back there. So that leaves two teams. And you tell me which one you'd rather go to as a free agent if you want to play for a playoff team. Right? So I think the Jets are very in on Steve Mason. It just depends their mindset on the goalie that they want. Because Steve Mason would come in more so as the guy that they would be looking at as a starter, whereas Brian Elliott would be kind of the mentor, and you would think that they still want Hellebuck to be maybe the 1A going into next year.
Yeah, and I agree the same. I think that the options are closing. I would think Steve Mason deserves to be a starter, though, at this age. But as you point out, if there's no jobs there's no jobs. Elliot Friedman continues to write, Los Angeles appears to be ready to have Jack Campbell as Jonathan Quick's backup, and he thinks Mike Condon received a few calls as teams weren't sure he'd be available. A lot of that was discussed yesterday on the afternoon ride with Husser and Rick Ralph here on TSN 1290, that people just assumed Ottawa was going to re-sign Mike Condon, and it hasn't happened yet. And I would presume it's because Mike himself wants to test free agency, or at least go through the meeting period to see what interest is out there. I mean, Dorion in Ottawa was nominated for GM of the Year mostly because of the deal that brought Condon and solidified that position when Craig Anderson went through what he went through with his wife this year, and really wouldn't have made the playoffs without his contribution to the team. Everybody assumed he'd be signed up, and it looks like he may go to market as well or return to Ottawa. The other news he wrote, gentlemen, talking about defensemen, we're going to get into this at 7 o'clock extensively. Brendan Smith, Michael Stone, Trevor Daley, Carl Alsner, those are some of the defensemen names out there. But he reports, Elliot Friedman does in his 30 thoughts, Ottawa and Winnipeg are looking at Dmitry Kulikov, a left-handed option. He played for Guy Boucher in junior. There's no way last year is a true indication of his play.
Yeah, he had a rough go for sure last year. So, and you know, maybe even from a point standpoint, for sure, last year at 47 games, 5 points, a guy typically that'll get you 20 to 30 type points over the 82 games. Also has averaged more than 20 minutes for 6 years consecutive, I believe. Some fairly ugly possession numbers the last couple of years. But nonetheless, this is the kind of guy that I hope that they add on here. And, we, you know, whether he wrestles a top four position away from Toby, for instance, or not, Probably not, but maybe. And then at the very least, because it's not hard to forecast or think injuries are going to come into play, you get a guy at least that can come in and be suitable to sort of be a stopgap measure to strengthen the team in time of need. And you know what's going to happen. It's just haunted the Jets the last couple of years. So, yeah, I think it'd be great if Kulikov came here.
Yeah, that would be an interesting one. And you have to assume his back injury is all healed up because that's what slowed him down. Like, I don't even know if I look at his year in Buffalo as a true indicator of the kind of player that he really is, mm-hmm. because 2 years prior to that, he had pretty solid possession numbers in Florida playing a pretty heavy role there. So it wouldn't be the worst move. And you could probably get him for less dollar end term than a guy like Carl Alsner, which I think is a big plus. Another guy that I think would be of interest is Patrick Wierkosz from Colorado, who Colorado didn't even send out a qualifying offer on. And that's a guy, a 6'5" defenseman who can skate and moves the puck pretty well. So that might be, you know, if you're looking maybe more of a bargain buy, that might not be a bad idea for Chevy to take a look at.
Well, Kulikov has 8 years in the league, and he's only 26. His salary last year was $4.5 million. His cap hit was $4.3. I agree. I think the year in Buffalo last year, his first, the rest of it was Florida, was sort of an outlier. I don't think he's actually that bad. What his numbers that he put up and how he played, if he's healthy, but making $4.5 last year, I don't know what he's going to be asking on the free agent market and what that could cost the Jets. And that's the thing when we're talking about this, too, is, and maybe there's a move to be made on the back end with some of the guys that I think would be cool to go into the season with the five guys and add this left-handed D guy. But at 4.5 or a 5, if he gets that on the open market, that's another big ticket on your blue line here in Winnipeg.
But this year you can eat it, and it's not a problem. Deal with it when it might become a problem, I dare say. Just make sure that you're strong in the back end for this upcoming super important season.
More free agency talk and some names and some comments at 7 o'clock today on The Big Show. But up next, we hear from Blue Bomber quarterback Matt Nichols on TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 is proud to be a media sponsor for MTS Super Spike July 21st and 22nd at Maple Grove Rugby Park. Registration is now open and event tickets for non-participants are on sale as well. Taking the stage this year is multi-award winning Sam Roberts Band. Proceeds from this event will be supporting Kids Sport and the True North Youth Foundation. More information is online at TSN1290.ca. The Big Show, Jim, Troy, and Brandon. We're going to hear from quarterback Matt Nichols via Winnipeg Blue Bombers. But Troy Westwood just tweeted this out from USA Today where Vince Young rips Ryan Fitzpatrick and Jeff Fisher. Rips him a new one.
Yeah, I'm not sure what he's trying to accomplish with this here. Just talking about being a little bit miffed that Fitzpatrick is still in the league with the number of picks and all the rest of it, and then gets into some of the history he had with Jeff Fisher. Including a couple of times where he felt that he was treated unfairly. It's interesting, though, because one of the times is Jeff Fisher closing the airplane door and taking off when Vince Young was late, but he saw Vince Young pull in to the parking area, but had the plane take off anyway, and I'm all for that, man. There's on time and there's being late, and if you're late, you know, the coach shouldn't hold it for you. You got to make an example to the team to be on time. So it just kind of strange. You just wonder where he's at mentally right now. Comes back for a comeback, puts time and effort into it, fails miserably. Now he's sitting at home doing nothing with that fire still burning, probably to play. I just kind of hope he's in a okay place.
It kind of sounds like a guy who was a god in college and expected everything to still revolve around him once he got to the NFL. And it didn't do that, and he couldn't handle it.
Yeah. And he still can't handle it, right? Which is dangerous.
I haven't got my Sports Illustrated this week yet, but it is the Where Are They Now with Allen Iverson on the cover. And in there is Vince Young. And I'm told the article actually says Vince is in Saskatchewan right now trying to resurrect. Like, the whole article is Where Is He Now is done, obviously, a week or two ago when he was. in Saskatchewan. So it'll be an interesting read. Jim Troy and Brandon on the Big Show, TSN 1290. Of course, we're going to get into NHL free agency and hear from Mark Mathot at 7 o'clock. But let's talk Bombers now, gentlemen. They kick off their regular season Saturday in Regina. Full Blue Bomber game day coverage here on TSN 1290 as well on Saturday, as well as free agency coverage starting at 10 a.m. with Rick Ralph and Joel Marcoux. But Matt Nichols addressed the media yesterday, and he had these thoughts on their opening day, which, again, is this Saturday in Regina.
Yeah, absolutely is. And you know, it's nice when that schedule came out. And, you know, for me personally, knowing that I was going in as a starter, I feel like for 4 months now I've visualized, you know, being in that atmosphere. I know there's going to be planes flying over and fireworks going off and all kinds of stuff. So, I feel like I'm mentally prepared for it, and I know my teammates are, especially, you know, a lot of the young guys getting to go there in the preseason, I think, was big. They could see a version of what it will be like, and, you know, we'll be able to talk to those guys and let them know it's going to be, you know, amped up about 50% from that. So, you know, we expect a crazy atmosphere, but, you know, once the whistle's blown, it's 12-on-12 football, and, you know, we'll see how it goes.
I've always gotten a bit of a kick out of the specific rivalry with the Bombers in Saskatchewan, and when you go there, having to warn the guys, hey, guys, it's going to be crazy. All of the Americans that came to Canada that have come here, where have they come from? Division I, crazy-ass rivalry, 100,000-plus people in the stands. Really? You got to warn them? Look out, guys, it's going to be crazy over there in front of 35,000 people. Like, come on, man.
Like, dude, I played at Ohio State. I didn't go to Delaware University, okay?
Crazy.
It's fun. Listening to some of the comments last year from some of the American players, that was what they echoed. They're like, man, I played.
Do you have any clue where I came from?
I played Alabama Auburn. Like, this is this is basically what a summer league practice sounds like for us guys.
Is it crazier, though, than that? Like, is it just, I know the number of people is massively.
Oh, no, they're way more rabid, I think.
But is it more rabid in the States and compared to Regina?
Exponentially. Exponentially, man. In every single facet, it's way crazier.
Interesting. Matt Nichols has had an interesting year as well. And 12 months ago or a year ago, you know, not even the starter. Now, not only is he sort of come in and taken over the job, but this is the start of the season for him as the bona fide starter with the Winnipeg Blue Bombers.
Yeah, and a guy that, hey, man, he won the up against Mike Riley. Not too long ago, he won the job out of training camp before he suffered a bad knee injury, and then had things his career sort of squashed for a little bit, and now he's in a position again. It's going to be fascinating. How does he? You know, I kind of liken his position. Last year, he ends up winning the starting job and starts rolling downhill with it, and now it's almost like he's got the lead after three rounds in a golf tournament, and wakes up Sunday morning. And this is your tournament to go win. You know, what do you do on Sunday? And it's kind of like what it is for him in a sense now where, okay, man, this is your team now. This is what you've tried to achieve for quite some time in playing pro, and this is your baby now. Let's see what you do with it. And I think he steps up, and he looks like he's sort of matured and looks really calm. He looked fantastic over the second and third quarters there of that second preseason game. And, of course, last year what he accomplished in the playoff game, surprised, I think, a fair number of people, and like he looked fantastic out there. So and you know what, guys, with the defense of the Blue Bombers, he's going to have to be fantastic until I see proof that this defense can stop people. It's not hard for me to imagine that the Bombers have to put up 30 at the new Mosaic Stadium to win this game on Saturday.
Well, Matt Nichols goes into the season as the starting quarterback this year for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. It's his also under Paul LaPolice, who's heading into his second year, I believe, as offensive coordinator. They have an expanded playbook, and here's Matt Nichols' comments on that expanded playbook now that they've sort of not only given him the starting job that he earned last year and for several games, but also heading into a new season with the same offensive coordinator.
I guess you'll have to wait till Saturday.
You're not going to let that cat out of the bag, are you?
No, but like I said, I mean, we're year two, and we can do some more things that we weren't able to do last year. So, you know, I think this offense is in good shape, and you know, really for us, it's always been the same thing. As cliche as it is, it's about us and, you know, us going out and just doing our job and making throws when they're there, making the tough catches, and you know, being tough football players and just doing your job and. things tend to open up for us. You know, Coach Napo's one of the best coordinators I've ever played for, and I have a ton of respect for him, and I feel like we're on the same page every game. So just look forward to another year working together.
Matt Nichols on the afternoon ride here on TSN 1290 yesterday with Rick Ralph and Hustler, of course. How much bigger can this – and, of course, he's not going to give away any secrets, like he said, but the playbook and the expanding of it and everything else, that always is interesting to me, because you even hear that, like, with Tom Brady and guys like Brett Favre, who had been in organizations for years, had one been successful, and they talk about not a different playbook, not that we're created some new plays because people sort of saw what we did last year, but it's always an expanded one. How much more creative can they get with Paul Appelese and Matt Nichols in your mind?
Well, I thought they were pretty creative last year. So I think they can just sort of, I don't know how much more creative you can get. I thought they used misdirection and deception brilliantly, for sure. But from a production level, they can get a little bit more successful as far as net offense goes. They were sort of mid-pack last year in net offense and rushing yards and passing yards. So even points, right? Just fifth in points per game. So they did a pretty darn good job last year. Their O-line took a big step for probably 10 years, maybe more than that. The Bombers were mired near the bottom of the CFL for sacks allowed. Last year, they were tied for third fewest sacks allowed, which was such a big step. And that's where it all starts. And then you get Matt Nichols to get the ball in his hand. And how's he going to dish it off? You know, look at some of the other receiving core in the West, and the Bombers, their average, I think, at best, Andrew Harris is going to have to play another big role here for sure. But there's no doubt whatsoever, the combination last year of this offense being average, and what really bolstered the team was the fact also on top with the offense being just an average production-wise, they did only allow or commit the second fewest turnovers of all the offenses in the CFL, which contributed overall to the Bombers being plus 29. And that's the big question, people looking at the Bombers wondering, is there going to be regression this year? That plus minus, the Bombers offense needs to be better so that they don't need to depend so much on that plus 29 type number to have a record of 11-7, right? You know, the defense doesn't look like it looks like it's going to continue to struggle. Will they take the ball away at the same rate? Will the Bomber offense not give it up in the similar fashion to last year? Those are some big time questions, and it looks like the offense is going to have to carry this team.
The Big Show on TSN 1290, you think they can create some new magic? I mean, they can, and now that they've been together longer, but I'm just wondering how much more you expect from this offense.
Well, I think they're looking for more of an explosive element, right? Like the big play down the field, because they didn't necessarily, I mean, Darvin, they did have it in Darvin Adams, but he went out and they were more of a dink and dunk offense than necessarily try and stretch the field a little bit. But I think they feel like with a couple new weapons that they have and Adams healthy, that they could do that. And the big, you talked about the plus 29 being a number that isn't sustainable, but I think Justin Medlock's field goal number is one, not that it's unsustainable, but that's a number that you want to come way back down to. Not that Medlock misses more, but
the number
of attempts go down because he's kicking PATs instead of field goals.
Well, the only thing I'll say about that is, to me, it wasn't like they were knocking a bunch of red zone type of field goals through the uprights, right? Like Medlock was deadly over 40 yards, so there was a bunch of times they didn't even get into the red zone. So I understand criticizing an offense or being concerned when an offense stalls inside the red zone or inside the 20, but I hesitate to do that a little bit with this offense. But most certainly they need to, if they want to take a step as a team, get into the end zone a little bit more often. I'm intrigued by the call that you have, Wicks, you mentioned, and I think a lot of people feel of the big plays here and trying to manufacture those. The thing about the big play and the stretching down the field is that's when you start to offer up and serve up those potential interceptions. And I wonder from a decision-making standpoint if Paul Appelese is going to refrain from that a little bit, trying to take that cowboy element still out of Matt Nichols and protect the ball. Paul Appelese is, just in a real fundamental sense, ball security is such a massive thing to him. I don't know how profoundly different the approach will be on offense this year to lob it down the field into 50-50 type situations.
He also is willing to make risks, though, and make plays like that. Like the pass that, who was it, Roy Kohlert that threw the pass to Matt Nichols for a touchdown last year? the receiver.
But those can be real sound plays that work at a high level because of the element of surprise. That approach is a little bit different from having a one-on-one situation 50-50 down the field ball. And you're leaving it up to Matt Nichols to go cowboy and toss it up there. Yeah, a la Mike Riley to a Darius Bowman who wins. That's one thing. Do the Bombers have a receiver? And a guy talked to me about this yesterday. He thinks that's what the offense needs, is a receiver that can go up and win those, similar to what you saw S.J. Greed doing for the Argos, what you see a Darius Bowman doing for years for Edmonton. Do the Bombers have that guy?
Well, bring in LaDainian Washington, who is the story of camp so far. He's 26 years old. He's 6'4", 210 pounds. He's out of the University of Missouri. He has a very interesting story because his dad was murdered when he was 5. His mother died of a stroke and died at his high school basketball game when he was 15. And he spent the rest of his time playing football and helping raise his brothers. He's been all around the National Football League because of his skill and his talent. You saw him catch a touchdown in the preseason. Spent time with Dallas, San Francisco, the Giants, Cleveland, Miami, Pittsburgh, Kansas City, and then Edmonton signed him last year. He was released from the practice roster on September 13th. And Matt Nichols has a lot of faith in LaDainian Washington this year.
Yeah, he's just a dynamic player that wants to be great. And, sometimes that's half the battle for Americans coming up and really trying to, grasp the game and just enjoy his time up in Canada. And I felt like he, from the moment he stepped on the field up here with us, he's been making plays and it showed that he wants to be better. And I was talking to Weston about him today and, making sure that we were, both working with him to make sure that he's on the same page as us and knows his job. And I think we both agreed that you really just got to tell him once on how to fix something. He goes out and does it immediately. Some guys will make the same mistakes over and over. And those are usually the guys that don't work out, but he's a guy that really takes the coaching and wants to be good.
Matt Nichols talking about LaDainian Washington, one of the new receivers that really earned a roster spot this year in training camp. But we'll keep an eye on him. We'll have more from Matt Nichols later in the program. Up next on The Big Show, the Blue Jays cut a pitcher and they lose again. And Toronto FC and the Montreal Impact put on a show last night. That's next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 is proud to support the fifth and final HSC Foundation Celebrity Human Race. It's your chance to race around Winnipeg, competing in challenges and puzzles with your team's celebrity. September 22nd and 23rd, the money raised allowed the HSC Foundation to improve care for Manitoba families with research initiatives, cutting-edge medical equipment, state-of-the-art facilities. To learn more or to register, visit TSN1290.ca. Jim Troy and Brandon, The Big Show. Phil Jackson, what do you make a day? He's out in New York.
Yeah,
he's leaving the Knicks today.
All reports is he's out. Here's Phil Jackson, what he's done, what he did for the Knicks. Worked 1,200 days. During that time, he was paid $60 million. That equals $50,000 a day. $50,000 a day is what he made with the New York Knicks to basically do absolutely SFA. Right? Like, fled the engine, stall, however you want to describe his tenure. Just a nightmare.
I just love that the battle, the individual battle between him and Carmelo ends with Melo getting the upper hand. Like the waiting
game. Not often
game,
does a player win, right?
It takes an extraordinary situation for that to happen, but that's what this is, where it was, at no point was this successful, really. Like ever. It was just a gong show the
right
second
the
he walked into MSG.
And I got to give it to Matt Leibel. That Leibel called this. He called the gong show, said it would be a failure. I thought Leibel was an idiot. Well, Leibel is still an idiot, but he was right in this one.
There's a town south of my hometown, Whitefish, Montana. Phil Jackson has a place there. Apparently lives on an island, canoes out to it every off season, and you can't get a hold of him. No phone, no email. He has to canoe into town,
Zen
get
master,
groceries.
Huh?
Yeah. Canoe into the land, drive to town, get his groceries, and literally check his mail. If like at the time that I heard this, the Lakers wanted to get a hold of him, they had to send him a letter in the off season. And he had a basketball court on his property,
and the kids in town would always come and jump the fence or whatever and play hoops on his property. And he got so upset with that that he actually went into town and built them a full-size, in the middle of the town, basketball court for the kids to play on.
Huh.
And everybody said, oh, isn't that nice of Phil Jackson? In reality, it was get off my lawn.
Yeah,
It was very Clint Eastwood-ish. The Blue Jays have released Jason Grilli, who struggled mightily this year. Interesting time for him as a pitcher in Toronto. Came in and really did some really good things for them to help him get in, and once they were in the playoffs last year. But in the span of a year, he's now out with the Blue Jays. And the Blue Jays lose again to not only the team that gives up the most runs in the American League, but the pitcher himself, who has the highest ERA in the league, but yet he's excelled at against the Blue Jays this year, and they just can't score. They had the bases loaded last night again, so many opportunities to cash a run, and couldn't get anybody in. It has to be so frustrating to John Gibbons, the way he's moved this lineup around the past week, week and a half, and still can't get any offense out of this team.
At some point in time, he is what he is, right? The whole thing, and you wonder as they, like they're working their way away from 500, where they need a win streak again pretty darn soon, just to have 500 in their sights. That, you know, that whole buyer seller thing comes into play here. And lose a couple more here, or you get further away from 500, and you just kind of wonder how much of a shakeup might there be with the Toronto Blue Jays.
Well, now I'm reading this morning on some people, like the All-Star break is right around the corner, second weekend in July, I believe. So not this weekend, but next weekend. And they said if they're not anywhere near 500, then they have to make some changes because it's basically over. And the story I'm reading today is Marcus Stroman would get you the highest value and a ton of value in a trade.
Ooh, that would sting. As a mild fan of the Blue Jays, I mean, he's the guy that you see him up on the hill and tune in to watch him. That would really sting if that's the guy they make a move with. Jiminy Crickets.
It would sting, but what is the history of pitchers 5'8 and 5'9 in the majors?
Yeah, fair. Like, shooting stars.
Like, yeah, and I think Tim Lincecum is maybe a perfect example of that. And you just... like, you kind of wonder if you are the Blue Jay. Like, that's a name that, I agree, fan favorite. I love watching him. One of my top three favorite players on the team right now. But how long is he going to be successful? And if you're going to, if you're going to trade him, this would be the year to do it.
Yeah, fair.
Yeah, and that's what these articles were saying. If you're gonna blow up this team, people talk about like the Josh Donaldsons and stuff like that. What will garner you? The player they feel would garner you the most in a trade is Marcus Stroman. Young. You know, and I agree with that. Like, obviously, you're going to get something for Donaldson if you decide to go that way, too. But for a pitcher like that, you know, apparently that's what the reports are. And that's where the Blue Jays are right now. And they'll continue their series with Baltimore tonight right here on TSN 1290. We'll touch on the Montreal Impact Toronto FC game next, but delve into and hear from Mark Mathot's comments on the no trade and some free agency coming up on the Big Show on the Royal Sports Power Hour on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
Our province is packed with shining stars in the world of sports. Every week, TSN 1290 would like to showcase and reward these individuals who are making a big impact and difference in what they do. Nominate a Manitoban athlete, coach, or volunteer who is dedicated to making their sport matter every Friday on the Big Show. We'll showcase the Subway Sports Star of the Week and reward him or her with a $50 Subway gift card. Visit TSN1290.ca to nominate your sports star, and we could be featuring them very soon, including on this Friday's Big Show. Jim Tolf, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you. Royal Sports Power Hour on TSN at 12:90, 5 minutes past the hour. And before we get back into the free agency talk and hear from Mark Mathot and his comments on his no trade, which we suspect involved Winnipeg. Well, it was all six Canadian teams, but we suspect Winnipeg was interested in acquiring his services. TFC wins a Canadian championship last night with a last-second stunner. TFC 2-1 victory over Montreal Impact on Tuesday, the Canadian Championship title. And it was bedlam yesterday for that game. It was outstanding. I just was sort of flipping back and forth, but then caught the last 15, 20 minutes of it. What an outstanding atmosphere and another gigantic battle between those two teams.
Yeah, and I guess the BMO field can sell out. Huh? Argos fans, it was just that where the MLS is right now is for all those who have, you know, in and around my age who have waited and for soccer to take hold and become a relevant sport here, supported in a professional league, is such a wonderful celebration of the game. And like Portland was playing Seattle over this weekend, and it was absolute must watch. It was just constant. It was like Nashville playoff crowd involvement times about four. And then you're watching yesterday and just the constant activity by the crowd, the atmosphere that's set over at BMO Field and some of the play. And of course, there's some controversy and all the rest of it in that game. But just where exactly MLS is right now is an absolute treat. And it gets me real excited thinking that, you know, upcoming here shortly, that we're going to have a premier team here in Winnipeg and another sort of developmental league towards the MLS, and we're going to be able to watch some pretty high-level soccer right here at our own IGF field. It's cool stuff.
Well, and you wonder, like, the more this kind of takes hold right now, how long until the MLS starts to push past baseball in Canada? Maybe more scarily, what about the CFL and MLS?
Why? And I know I saw something last year, and I think the numbers for MLS were either right there with baseball in the States or bigger than the States already, right? And that's a very intriguing question to ask for Canadians, Wix, is when does the MLS, does it start to challenge CFL games? That's a very, very interesting question.
And how can't you say that when TFC is outdrawing the Argos by a substantial margin?
Yeah.
Well, I think the CFL is in danger with the MLS in Canada. Not in danger, not that it's a bad thing to have them both very popular, but I agree with you when you see the atmosphere and the growth of the game. And I just thought, one thing, if we're talking MLS and CFL, the officiating last night in the match was rivaling some of the things that go on in the CFL.
Kind of poor, yes.
With no instant
replay.
Well,
all the leagues, though, right?
Yeah, well.
Like, what league is happy right now? What fan base is happy with their league's officiating right now? Pick your sport. Everyone's up in arms. And then, of course, that, like, the red card and for last night and, you know, a questionable tackle, questionable call, all the rest of it comes into play. And then, but also there's something, I mean, if you're with the impact, you're not happy with that at all. But from a more of a macro view, take a step back from that, it just pours a little bit that much more gas on the rivalry, right, for the next time around.
This is The Big Show on TSN 1290. We'll get back into the free agency talk now, gentlemen. We'll look at some of the lists and some of the guys. Kevin Shattenkirk reportedly has some interest from Tampa Bay again as they tried to trade for him, and some of the other D-men that are going around. But Mark Mathot was on our sister station, or affiliate station, I should say, in Ottawa yesterday at TSN 1200, and talked about the whole process of being picked up by the Las Vegas Golden Knights in expansion, the not waiving of his no move for 10 teams, six Canadian ones, and of course Winnipeg suspected to be or reported to be one of the teams that were interested in his service. Here's Mark Mathot on his no-trade, 10-team no-trade clause yesterday on TSN 1200.
You know, there were teams reaching out, so to speak, and I just, you know, I'm in a position where I don't want to burn any bridges by saying no. You feel bad saying no to teams, like as if I'm at a point in my career now that I could do that, where 10 years ago I never would imagine saying no to anybody. But, you know, I worked hard to get that 10-team no trade in my contract, and thank God I have it, because it allowed me to dictate a little bit where I wanted to go play. And I think this isn't something that I asked for. I didn't want to move. I didn't want to have to uproot my family and go somewhere else in the middle of a contract. But here we are, and I've got to deal with it. So it was a situation that wasn't very pleasant, but I've got a ton of support around me, and it worked out.
What are your thoughts on that and the no trade? And the
Even when I was a player in the CFL, I had, from a union standpoint and players' rights and stuff like that, I just never believed them. Like, I don't think players should have many rights, really. I think it should be up on the teams, the organization, the league. You're just a pawn in a chess game as a player. So, he worked real hard for the no-sure and all the rest of it. But there is an element in a big way to me of the entitled athlete in these situations. I don't think any athlete should have the right to have a no-move clause or a no-trade clause. I don't care what league you're talking about. And specifically here we're talking hockey. I just think it's horrible. What is most important for leagues, to me, for long-term health, is to have as much parity as possible for opportunity for each organization to be as healthy and viable as possible. When you start to choke out small markets in your league with things like no move clauses, no trade clauses, all the rest of it, then that doesn't do anything to help your product or your league. I don't like it whatsoever, and I don't think they should be available to the players. I can't stand them. They're like currency at this point in time, where you see certain organizations dishing them out, putting them on top of what are already guaranteed contracts. Like, these guys have guaranteed contracts. You're basically stuffing your face at a buffet until you start to puke with benefits like this now, where on top of the guaranteed contract, you can lump on a no-move or a no-trade type clause. I just think they're ridiculous and bad overall for the league and the game.
I'm really surprised to hear you say you don't think the athletes should have much say in anything.
No say. You're playing. You have this tremendous privilege to play sports in a professional league.
But you don't think employees have a right to have a say in how things work? Like, they're basically employees of the league.
Yeah, I don't think that they, like, for instance, should we here as employees have a right to say how Bell Canada goes about conducting its business? No, I don't think so. I think
you're an employee. Well, not conducting their business, but how they handle us.
You're paid to provide a certain level of performance. I think that's all you should get as a player. You show up, you play, and that's it. The whole, like, to be able to determine where you go and all the rest of it, I can't stand that. I just don't think that serves the integrity of the league and all the different teams involved well. And I think when you are a league, that's an incredibly important element. And the players should buy into it as well, in my opinion. I shouldn't be able to dictate where I go, where I don't go. I don't like that at all.
Well, and I think we get into problems once we get to the Mark Methots of the NHL. And this is no offense to a guy like Mark Methot, but a guy like him, you know, a solid defenseman, shouldn't have that much say in where he goes. And you look at the amount of players that have no movement and no trade clauses on each team in the NHL. There's three teams that have three guys with either no trades or no moves. Every other team in the NHL has over four. And you see the numbers, and most of them have around five, six, or seven. And some of the names on it is just, it's ridiculous. And it has gotten completely out of control. Now, I don't think when this was first instituted that the NHL thought it would get to this point where, you know, combined with a free agency and the salary cap, that's kind of the added currency and the added bonus you can add to a player to make sure that he signs with your team. But it kind of sucks the fun out of the outside of the ice aspect of the league, where fans love trades and fans love player movements and that sort of thing, and that's kind of being ripped away from them. And if it's hampering a team like the Jets to the point where they feel like they can make any trades, well, then it's hurting a lot of small market teams as well. And if you're a league that wants parity, I mean, you got to figure a way out around that. Now, I think GMs can be creative and work around that, but like, that's something I think when it comes to negotiating time for the CBA, I wonder how hard the league pushes to limit the amount that are handed out. Because I don't think you can ever just nix them all together. But maybe you could find a way to limit that to a certain number per team.
But what about the idea that the Ottawa Senators wanted to invest in Mark Methot? They wanted to hand him some money. They wanted him for that long of a contract. And now they don't want you. And so they want to discard you or go ship you wherever you want to go. And to me, the compensation has nothing to do with it. The compensation is there. It's going to always be there. But the idea of, I committed to you and now you want to break this commitment, I should have a say in where I go in that commitment.
It sounds like,
or
doesn't that sound like any other employment though?
Well, that's why I'm saying I'm surprised for you, especially as an ex-athlete, Troy, to say that they should have no say in it. Right? If Bell sat down today and said, we got a station in Inuvik and we're shipping you there, wouldn't you want a say in that?
Well, I can say, well, I suppose, but I don't think in a lot of times that you can compare pro sports to jobs in the rest of society, in the community. Like, I don't think it's the same sort of thing, because you're talking about maintaining the integrity and parity of a league. Like, that's the driving force for the NHL, is to make sure that you offer the same level of opportunity for success to each of the branches on your tree, which are the teams in your league. So it creates a very difficult situation for small markets in any league, and I just from that standpoint, I disagree with it. And yeah, and people always say to me, because I'll voice my a lot of thoughts and opinions about the player versus organization or owners, thinking that I should have a player's understanding, whatever that is. But to me, you take a step away from that and have a larger view of the situation, and ultimately, like, it's the privilege that you have to play professional sports, and you're getting paid to play a sport. That's remarkable, right? And so, to me, I'm more about the health and the well-being of the organizations and the league that provide that opportunity for a player to go and get paid to play the game. To be able to determine where you go, where you don't go, to me, is something that really undermines the overall health and well-being of a league.
And the final viewpoint I'll bring up on this is, like, the players, people say, well, if you don't like, you don't have to play or whatever. Well, that's how the owners are making money, is off players like this, is off players like in the league. Like, there is a sort of give and take here that you can say, if you don't like it, you can quit. Well, fair enough. If Sidney Crosby doesn't like it and he quits, who hurts? The league hurts. Mm-hmm. Like, if Sidney Crosby sits down at 30 and they go, we're shipping you to, I don't know, we want to trade you to Winnipeg, or we want to trade you to Ottawa, and he goes, you know what, I'm happy here, I've made $50 million, I don't want to go. Who really hurts?
But the fact of the matter is, it would be remarkably rare that players would quit. I heard yesterday that Jerome McGinley is not likely to come out and play for $1 million anywhere, right? So if you've made so much money that you're no longer interested in reporting to the team that you're traded for because you don't want to uproot your family and all the rest of it. Like, I understand the implications for families and all the rest of it, but to me, I put much more weight on maintaining the wellness of the league than I do on specific, dare I say, entitled players that feel like they've earned the right or deserve the decision-making power as to where and where not they should be able to go. I just think inherently with any league that is something that cannibalizes the integrity of any league.
It's an interesting discussion. We'll open the Boss Pizza fan line and get your thoughts on no trade and no moves and limited ones and everything else at 9 on the Boss Pizza fan line. Continue the hockey talk next. The Jets development camp. We'll hear from Kyle Connor on the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290, United Firefighters of Winnipeg present Caring for Kids. Support the staff and services of the Children's Hospital Foundation of Manitoba today. Text KIDS to 129090 with standard message rates applying. Every time you do, United Firefighters of Winnipeg will donate $1 to the Children's Hospital, up to $1,000. Your actions can help the Children's Hospital keep caring for kids across Manitoba. Kids like Michaela, who is currently battling cancer. For more on Michaela and caring for kids, visit TSN1290.ca. Caring for Kids is presented once again by United Firefighters of Winnipeg and TSN 1290. Jim, Troy, and Brandon. Jets development camp continues today. 10 o'clock is the on-ice session, or one of them. Jets, WinnipegJets.com will have all the scheduling, as does TSN 1290. And, of course, if you want to get out there, the best day to go is Friday at 10:30. They'll have their inter-squad game where you'll actually see some actual hockey being played. A part of development camp is some of the prospects that are there, including Kyle Connor, who started the season with the Jets last year, was sent down to the American Hockey League, came back up for one game, got a goal in that last game, and he talked about what the year overall was like for him.
I think definitely learned a lot as a player and what it takes to play at the level and stay there, and also to produce and be a good player at that level. And I think it was a good year, and I learned a lot from the coaches, and it helped my game tremendously.
20 games, he had 2 goals and 5 points for the Winnipeg Jets, 19 at the start of the season, 1 at the end of the year. And for the Manitoba Moose, Kyle Connor, in 52 games, had 25 goals and 44 points, and really came a long way last year, I thought. Is he I'm not going to say given to make the team, but does he make the team this year in your mind? Minds.
I'm going to go with, I sure hope so. And I think so. One thing for sure, I saw 3 Moose games last year. Each one that I saw, Kyle Connor looked like a man amongst boys out there from an offensive standpoint. Like, he was simply toying with guys out there. And it's real hard. I mean, he come back, played one game, right, for the Jets, and looked fantastic in that one game. But that is one game. But isn't it going to be something? If he is ready. Sorry. And if he does stick and stay. If he gets you 25 goals or 20 goals, if he's productive out there, what does that do for the Jets from an offensive standpoint, a team that was 7th last year in goals for per game in the NHL? He is a remarkable wild card in what this team might achieve if he's ready. I suppose ultimately, boys, the question is, if he sticks and stays, it's probably going to be more because he's taken the steps he had to defensively than how good is he offensively. And you just kind of wonder with this team, when Paul Maurice is coming out and he has said, you know, last year we were young, and talking about this team now, where that's not going to be sort of a part of this team going forward, right? That whole young thing, we're done with that. We're moving forward here. Well, if Kyle Connor comes up and stays, you're still kind of young in that manner. And then also, I can't help but wonder, his sidekick with the Moose and the whole, like, the Jack Roslovic thing. Who's the Jets' fourth line center going to be? And I wonder, I think it was Paul Edmonds. I hope I'm not wrong in this. But I heard him talking, I think it was him a couple weeks ago or a week ago. And it seemed to me that he was inferring that he might think that maybe Jack Roslovic was ready to make the jump possibly as well. And I hope I have it right, Paulie, that it was you saying that. But
yeah,
wouldn't
he said
it
around the draft coverage. Yeah, he said, I think there is a shot that he does make the team.
So wouldn't that be interesting as well if Roslovic, and you know that they're going to keep Lowry in that third line spot regardless, right? That's just the way it's going to be. But is Roslovic able also to take that step and contribute?
Obviously, there's a shot he makes a team. Paul's quote was that he felt that he will
he's
make
ready.
The team.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's ready
yeah.
to make the team,
yeah.
I should say.
Yeah, ready, but will he is, I guess, the other thing. That's, because yeah. Andrew Copp, we all know the organization's kind of infatuation with Andrew Copp and him playing center.
But also, Copp was real solid out on that left wing. So if you start talking about that fourth line, is that a situation where you got Copp on the left side, maybe like Dan or whoever on the right, and then you got Roslovic in the middle of that?
And I wonder where they're going to line up Connor. Because, I mean, you could put him on the fourth line and shelter him and not really have to worry too much about, I think, him hurting you defensively. Or do you just go all in and say, you got
in.
A couple vets beside you. What if you put him with Scheifele and Wheeler and just kind of allowed his offense to flourish beside guys that can see the game in a similar way that he does?
Do you have him top 6 or top 9?
I was thinking more third line, but you're going right up to the top line. It's hard a little bit. Boy, that's a heck of a... If he's ready to take that jump, then holy smackers, like, buckle up and let's go. I think he'd be a wonderful compliment, possibly, to something like I was having a little bit of a fantasy land yesterday thinking, you know, this whole Joe Thornton thing. Wouldn't it be remarkable if Kyle Connor and then Joe Thornton in the middle with Joel Armia on the right? But if I can't have Thornton, then put Lowry in that situation. And I think that's like to have Armia out there with a guy like Kyle Connor and then you sort of had the mucker and the greasy, hard-working sort of cat in the middle of Lowry. Like, maybe that would work.
I think a guy like Connor has to be minimum top nine. Like, I don't have him on a fourth line with Lowry and maybe
Lowry's going to be on the third line, right? You know that the Jets will have him on the third line.
Well, I'm trying to figure this out. Like, if Connor goes up, I think Perreault has to play center. We'll take a break. We'll talk more about this as the show goes on. Lots to get to. Kyle Connor talking about his year from development camp. Marshall Ferguson's next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
The iHeartRadio app is where you stream TSN 1290 and hundreds of other radio and digital stations. Check out the Perfect 4 menu to customize your listening experience. Your music, your station's always free on the iHeartRadio app. And this next segment on The Big Show is brought to you by United Therapies Strive. Jim Tolth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki. Much more in Jets development camp and some line talk. And we'll open the Boss Pizza fan line at 9 o'clock. Get your thoughts on the Bombers. We heard from Matt Nichols earlier in the program, and we'll get your thoughts on the no-trade clauses in the National Hockey League after we ran Mark Mathot's comments as well on our affiliate station in Ottawa, TSN 1200. Right now we're going to talk some CFL, and we're going to do so with Marshall Ferguson from TSN, Canadian Football League draft analyst and Ticats play-by-play guy. Marshall, how are you?
Not too bad. How are we? Week one already in the books. This is awesome. We're off and rolling.
And what a week it was. Really good opening weekend, I thought, for the Canadian Football League. But more specifically, seeing how you do the Tiger Cats games, what's the reaction in Hamilton?
Just nervous anxiety, I think, is the best way to put it, guys, as it stands right now. The weird thing about this is the week two bye. Now, I know you guys had the week one bye, which is a hell of a thing, but the week two bye for the Ticats coming off of a game that they feel like, in Ken Austin's words, the offense was anemic and the defense wasn't able to stop any ball that was thrown in the air by Ricky Ray. I know S.J. Green had a crazy week, but when you look at the way that they played the ball in the air, it left something to be desired. So now you've got concerns like we did throughout the entire offseason here in Hamilton about the right tackle spot, being able to protect your franchise quarterback and the defensive backfield, because you went out and you re-signed Abdul. You signed Abdul Kanae. You re-signed Emmanuel Davis. Both of them aren't in uniform in week one, and your defensive backfield falls apart. And then you don't even get to prove that you can actually fix it in week two, because now you got to wait 2 weeks, and then guess where you're going in week three? On the road to New Mosaic after you guys opened up coming this Saturday. So it's one of those things where it's like, really? We got to wait to try to see whether or not these are actually real issues or if it was just a flash in the pan? So it's just left a lot of kind of nervous energy, I think, around the city.
Marshall, you were one of the few people who picked the Argos to win that game, and I saw you taking some heat from it from those in the Steel City, but you were bang on with it. What did you anticipate prior to the game in picking that? And when you watched the game, was it more the weaknesses of Hamilton that you were sort of taken aback by, or was it the surprising strength of the Argos?
It was one of those things where being a former university player, I think anybody who's been around the game long enough, whether it's at the professional level or amateur or whatever, if you've been to enough junior hockey games, you can kind of tell how a game is going to go. I chose that on a gut feeling, and you're right, I did take a lot of heat on Twitter, which is crazy. You would never think Twitter would have any negativity at all in it.
But, what?
but I did, and the reason that I picked Toronto, and I said this to several people online, was I had a gut feeling that Toronto had everything to play for. Like, I was there last year in week one, guys, when the Argonauts were opening up BMO Field, and there was all this energy and the tailgate and everything else. And the Ticats came in, and Simone Lawrence essentially single-handedly beat the Toronto Argonauts on their home field to open up the season. And that, I thought, really set the tone for not only attendance, which, as we know, was already bad this week, which is kind of shocking, but it set the tone for attendance and for the way the team was going to play throughout the season. This year, I looked at it and I saw Mark Trestman, and I thought, if this was the Montreal Alouettes of 2008 or 2009, is there any chance that they would lose their home opener if he was, you know, a first-year CFL coach and he had a veteran quarterback and he had a bunch of these free agent acquisitions that he's made, you know, whether it's SJ Green with the trade with Montreal or having some of the different linebackers that have come in, defensive linemen, like you look across that front line and the pass rush, and I saw Cleon Lang. I know Darrell Waad, the great Canadian from Western, was out, but there were some guys across there, and Ken Bishop and otherwise, that I just thought, you know what, the Ticats offensive line has a little bit of weakness, so that was definitely a concern for me going into it, but I thought it was a gut feeling of they have everything to play for, they need to win here to set the tone for the rest of their season to try to bump attendance and everything else, and then just trusted the gut and went with it and was correct. So to answer your question, it was a little bit of worrying about the Ticats' weaknesses and also just realizing that I think SJ Green's a hell of a player. I think Ricky Ray's got more in the tank left than we think, and I think Mark Trestman is one of the best coaches in the CFL in the last 10, 15 years. So put those three things together and then playing at home and a season opener, all the rest, and it just felt like the right pick.
So, Marshall, how does the East look to you now that we've sort of had 1 week? And like you said, it's only 1 week, but right. There's so many questions around the East.
Yeah, there really is. I'm going through film this year more than I ever have to try and get a sense for quarterback play, because we all know how important that is to the way that games are turn out and the style with which teams play. I have concerns about Hamilton, because when I look at the way that Zach Collaros attacked the Toronto Argonauts defense, he didn't have many attempts over 10, 15 yards. And part of that is Terrence Tolliver going out on his first catch, being out for the season with the ACL. And part of that is the offensive line not protecting him, which means Zach threw a lot of what I call, 9-1-1 emergency checkdowns, which any quarterback knows. You take the ball, you look at your first read, and by the time you try to get from your first to your second read, there's somebody in your face, and you go, and you just get rid of the ball. You just try to get it away as fast as possible. So if that continues for the Ticats, I don't know how they can have success, because that has to be part of the offense by taking shots. They have to be aggressive. They have to be creative. And if he doesn't have time to be able to move, then that's a concern for me. The other part of tracking quarterbacks I found really interesting is just how much Darian Durant spread the ball around. Like when I look at Mike Riley, even when I look at Matt Nichols out there in Winnipeg, I see a guy who is probably going to target 7 different receivers per game consistently. I thought Darian Durant would force feed Ernest Jackson. I thought that was just going to be one of those perfect marriages in week one against Saskatchewan where he'd go, yeah, they're a good matchup. We'll see how many times he gets in the ball. I thought it would be like Bo Levi Mitchell with Marquay McDaniel, where it's like, 14 targets or whatnot. But it wasn't. He spread the ball around, and if they can do that at a high level and have a high completion percentage, then I think Montreal, I'm not going to say they're for real. I'm not going to say they're a contender. I think there's issues with their team just like everyone else's. But they're kind of the question mark in the East. And I do think that it's an overreaction to say right now that Toronto is a contender. I think it's an overreaction to say that they are necessarily one of the top two teams. I think Ottawa is still right there. They played a real good team in Calgary and, of course, played them right down to the end. But seeing Ottawa give up a 14-point fourth-quarter lead wasn't exactly awe-inspiring. It's as close to a loss as you could possibly get in a tie, in my opinion. And so there's just a lot of teams in the East here, guys, that I look at and I say, I don't really know enough about you to predict it at this point. I think the preseason predictions are going to hold steady for at least 3 weeks until we really start to figure out what these teams are about.
A lot of people out West that I listened to or spoke to about the CFL kind of had the Bombers in Edmonton in some sort of a wrestling match here for a third spot. And the question up in Edmonton, I think for most everyone, was concern for that defense, thinking that that would hold back Mike Riley and that wicked explosive offense. It was remarkable what that defense achieved against Jonathan Jennings and the BC Lions with the amount of duress that they put that O-line and Jonathan Jennings under. 5 sacks, it was constant breakdown. Was what we witnessed in that game, is the Lions' O-line that bad, Marshall, or should the league be very concerned with that defensive front in Edmonton?
Yeah, it's a really good question, and I really do think that it's more about the Edmonton defensive line than it is the BC Lions' offensive line. When I look across that offensive line for BC, I see Hunter Stewart, I see Kirby Fabian, who's a pretty good player, even though he struggled a little bit in that game. And I genuinely think that the BC Lions are going to be okay. But Edmonton, I'm trying to put together a consistent comparison here to the Eskimos defensive line, and I'm not really sure that there is one at this point. again, very early on in the season, as we know, but hey, this is the world that we live in. And when I watched the way that the Edmonton defense rallied after J.C. Sherritt went down with Corey Jones coming in, like, they're already playing with Adam Konar, who's in for one of my Kingston guys, Corey Greenwood. There, he used to work at the desk of the YMCA when I was a kid, when he was in the offseason.
Come on.
But yeah, Corey was just down the road from me. He's a guy that went to Rigi, and Rigi off was Notre Dame High School, which wasn't exactly a rival of ours. They're lucky that they had a football program. Rigi, so the high school that Corey Greenwood went to, they would have about 130 guys come out for their men's volleyball team. They would have about 25 kids come out for their football team. It was so backwards to me, but it was just the culture of the school. So anyway, the way that they played, being able to work around those injuries on defense with their defensive line, I think it covered up a lot for the actual injuries because their D-line got after Jonathan Jennings with just a four-man rush, and they could play coverage in behind. But with that being said, I watched Edmonton's offense, and everyone's concerned about Jarrell Walker being gone in the offseason. Well, Duke Williams goes for four catches, 110 yards, and a touchdown. Everyone's concerned that, you know, Adarius Bowman only has 13 yards. Well, guess what? Brandon Zilcher goes for 152. He only had, it's amazing to me, Adarius Bowman had as many catches as John White, and he had two more receiving yards than Calvin McCarty. And when you put those things together, I would tell you, man, the new-look BC Lions with their offensive skill and position probably blew them out of the place. But it didn't happen, because Mike Riley's consistent, because they had a really balanced offensive attack. They led the CFL in week one when it comes to run-pass ratio, with about 39% of their play calls being run. And the way that they rallied around that defense and that defensive line, it's just Edmonton looks for real right now. So I'm really excited to watch them this week and find out if it's going to be a week-to-week thing or if that was, again, just a flash in the pan, which we can sometimes get in that week one.
Canadian Football League draft analyst and TigerCast play-by-play man, Marshall Ferguson, joining us on the Big Show this morning, TSN 1290. It's 45 minutes past the hour. Bombers start for real on Saturday in Regina. What do you expect from them? Offensively, we're looking for some growth, but defensively, there's some question marks. What do you see with the Bombers from what you've seen limited, prior to the season kicking off for them?
Yeah, for sure. The first thing that stood out to me, which kind of gets lost in the shuffle for myself as the draft analyst, is I think we make way too much of a big deal about number one overall picks, because this is not the NBA. This is not the NHL. This is the CFL, where a guy who, you know, University of Manitoba Bison's product and Keenan LaFrance can go in the sixth round and then turn into a superhero for you in the East Final like last year. So, but I did not realize that Faith Akakiti wasn't necessarily in the rotation early on here after training camp. I had talked to Darren Bombing from the station there, and you know, he had basically said to me that, yeah, he's finding it hard to get a spot in. He might not be in the greatest shape right now. But it's one of those things that through training camp kind of slides past you, because we're focused on all these big picture things, and Bear Woods is on the move, and headlines that come across like that, and you kind of forget, oh, yeah, that guy that we talked about throughout the entire spring and debated whether or not he would get drafted in the top five or whatnot, went first overall, he might not actually be a factor early on in the season. But in terms of the Winnipeg Blue Bombers and what they're doing, I have great respect for Mike O'Shea and Kyle Walters. I know that they can be prickly at times dealing with you guys in the media out there in Winnipeg, and I've been there and experienced that when I make my way into Investors Group Field for the Tiger Cats game last year, when we sat around during the lightning storm for about 3.5 hours, which was lovely. But when I watch the way that with Winnipeg plays with Matt Nichols, I mentioned that balance that you ended up finding from Darian Durant in week one against the Riders. I think that you're going to see a lot of that. I think he'll spread the ball around. And I know this as well. Paul Appelese, regardless of the personnel that he is given, will find ways to create offense. And he will find creative ways to find offense, which is something that I respect a lot, because there are a lot of fans in Hamilton who just want to see something new. They want to find, you know, a different flavor when they bite into the sandwich here of what the Tiger Cats offense is. And I think every time I've watched Winnipeg, listen, they're not running exotic, crazy, different concepts, but there are moments in Winnipeg Blue Bombers games last season where you went, well, I haven't seen that before. That looked a little bit different to me. And so I think that he will find a way to use all of the pieces that he has in front of him and really be able to create some offense. With that being said, I'm incredibly interested in this Winnipeg-Saskatchewan game, just because of the emotion that will be inside New Mosaic, because in week three, the Ticats play at New Mosaic against the Riders. So, I mean, how does Winnipeg handle all of that energy? How do they just focus on executing? How do they keep their quarterback clean? And then how do the Ticats attempt to do the same thing just a week later against the same team in the same location? It really ties into Tiger Cats fans. I know it's a Ticats bye week, But watching Winnipeg this week might be the greatest indicator of how week three could go for the Tiger Cats.
Great stuff, Marshall. We appreciate your insight and your time. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. Also, along the way out here, you guys used the supplemental draft pick? Drew Wolitarski, you wrote novels and stuff? Man, Ed Tate wrote all this stuff. It's crazy. You went out and got a guy who's from Minnesota, team captain. That's a good get.
That is a good get for a third-round pick, isn't it?
They like that supplemental draft here, man.
They do
I
like
know,
it.
Oh, they do. Shout out to Garrett Wagner.
and
care,
Keto Pobla. Who might be listening, actually. Keto's in town now. Thanks, Marshall. We appreciate it. We'll take a break. NHL news and notes next. If you've been injured at work in an accident or by playing your favorite sport, United Therapy Strive can help you live life the way you want. Go to strivetraining.ca. NHL news and notes next on The Big Show.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
Pick up your official TSN 1290 discount golf cart today. Hit the greens throughout the summer with great two-for-one deals at a multitude of Manitoba golf courses, including Granite Hills Golf Club, Selkirk Golf and Country Club, The Meadows Golf and Country Club, Larders at St. Andrews Golf and Country Club, and Minnewasta Golf and Country Club, just to name a few. There are plenty more. Book a tee time and show your card for great rates. Cards are only $34.95 each. Some restrictions apply. To purchase your card for a complete list of participating courses, visit TSN1290.ca. Jim, Troy, and Brandon on The Big Show. Darren bombing in to talk Bombers next.
For anyone interested, today at the rink on Lawson Crescent, 91 Lawson Crescent, there's a 3-on-3 tournament going on. It's for a memorial tournament for Cole Hamblin, who passed away from cancer. So they hold it to raise money for his foundation. But Brendan Leipzig's going to be out there. Madison Bowie's going to be out there. Ryan White, Justin Hamannik, Matt Bailey, Austin Lotz. All the rest of the guys on the ice will be WHA, NCAA, or Junior A players. It is 3-on-3 utter madness. You're talking stupid skill, wicked speed. If you want to go have your mind blown, this is worth pulling your kid out of school today near the end of the school year
to go watch these cats on the ice, man.
It's three quarters the size of a normal rink down at the rink. And they play 3-on-3, man. It is furious out on the ice. Go catch Cole Hamblin Memorial Tournament today at the rink. And it's from 11:30 to there's a barbecue 11:30 to 12:30. The tournament will be throughout the entirety of the day.
Education is still very important.
Oh, you can go learn something watching these cats bounce, fly around the ice too, man.
NHL news and notes time here on The Big Show, TSN 1290, Spencer Fu. The Edmonton native, who played Alberta Junior Hockey League for 2 years with the Bonneville Pontiacs, coming out of Union College, one of those unrestricted free agent college players, was deciding on Edmonton, Calgary, Detroit, and who was the other team in the running? I forget. There was four teams he was going to choose. He settles on the Calgary Flames. He's a right winger, 62 points in 38 games, including 26 goals. This changes a lot of things for the Calgary Flames, but your thoughts on Spencer Fu and what he may be able to do. 23 years old.
What do you mean it changes a lot of things for the Calgary Flames?
Well, look at their forward lines here. If this kid can come in and score.
I don't think it changes a thing.
You don't think so?
We're talking about at best a third liner. Like, wouldn't that be Calgary's best case scenario there? And I'm just always hesitant about 20 like overagers dominating at the NCAA ranks.
Tucker Poolman? Like, you don't think he's going to have any impact with the Calgary Flames and another scoring forward? Especially in their top nine. I think it makes their third line a whole lot better. Christopher Stieg hasn't signed yet.
Yeah, well, if he sticks and stays, maybe, man.
Oh, interesting. I thought you guys would be more.
What did Jimmy Vesey do for the Rangers last? Like, these guys come in
a lot.
He did a lot, really, because he was a fourth liner and a healthy scratch in the playoffs. So, like, we see these guys all the time, and I'm always hesitant that they're going to come in and make an impact unless their numbers were absolutely ridiculous, like a Johnny Gaudreau when he was a 20, 21-year-old and getting almost 100 points in a collegiate season.
You weren't supposed to bring up the Tucker Poolman thing.
VC
that hurts too much, like, because that's a concern, right? the age and the dominance, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, VC, he was his own worst enemy. He came in, he had to score 40 goals last year to live up to the hype, but he had 16 goals and 27 points. If you could add that to your third line as a signing, I think that, you know, that's pretty good. Now, who knows if Fu's going to do this in Calgary, but I just thought the sweepstakes going around and the fact that he's an Edmonton native and he chose Calgary over Edmonton, mm-hmm. which if you're an Edmonton native, but also Connor McDavid, I think that's pretty dynamic signing. Now, I don't expect him to come in and score 40 goals, but if you can score 20 on a third line, that's a good signing in my mind.
Sure. And it's so he goes in, does that. Hopefully Kyle Connor can match that on the Jets' third line.
Yes. Yeah. I fully expect the same. Free agency. Justin Williams, Kevin Shattenkirk, all these players going around. I keep saying we're going to touch on this. Maybe we'll get into it more tomorrow when we have more time. But just the free agent list. And I bring up Justin Williams again because we talked yesterday, gentlemen, like if the Jets, other than a left-handed D and a veteran netminder, would be interested in anything. I go back full circle to the idea of Justin Williams that you brought up a couple months ago. I like that if you could add that into this mix. And if it means a guy like Jack Roslovic has to start the year with the Moose or something like that, I think that's good added depth at 35 years old, some veteran presence, penalty kill, power play, all things that this team needs help with. If you could get him for a two-year, $5 million deal or $6 million deal, would you not be interested in that?
I think he would have to be. Yeah, so yeah. I mean, he's obviously still pretty doggone productive. And you think you're going to get him for what?
Well, I was thinking, and I know I always lowball, but
you
two
really
year,
do crazy
35-year-old, two-year, 2.5 a year or three. So say 2 years, $6 million. And $3 million a year.
And so he's going to push, what, Armia down to the fourth line?
Well,
like either Armia
or Roslovic gets more seasoning with the Moose. You just have that veteran guy that can come.
But Roslovic's like, to me, in the middle, isn't he?
To me, I think they shouldn't just go, we're going to stay youth. I think they should look at options like a Justin Williams to augment the things that they need to. I wouldn't make it a big signing and go, this is going to be a difference maker, but I think it would help the penalty kill. I think it would help the power play, and I think it'd give you some veteran depth.
I wonder if Justin Williams, 2 years, does he, because you know he's going to go somewhere to a team that's sniffing the cup pretty good, right? Does he see Winnipeg as being that team?
Hmm. Yeah, you wonder. But, you know, to Jim's point, when he signed in Washington 2 years ago, it was only for 2 years, $6.5 million. Like, he kind of got a low ball type of deal back then, but that was for a Stanley Cup kind of discount. So you wonder if the Jets would have to pay up a little bit because they're not in that kind of contender right now range.
I just think if you give him the same money, because I think he's gonna have to take less if he goes to contender, and that may be where he's at, you know, fair enough. But I think if you look at this roster and you're a veteran and you can come in and contribute, I think it's an option. We got to take a break. We're over time. Sorry. We'll come back with some more talk on free agency and the Boss Pizza fan line, but Darren Bombing's next on the Bombers on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Massa, your jury to take over the Knicks? That's what we're reporting the Knicks are after.
Get out of our cornflakes there, Mr. Dolan. What's going on?
Take Phil Jackson's spot?
Come up to the north?
How dare he? The Big Show, TSN 1290. Bombers, of course, kicking off their season in Regina on Saturday. Darren Bombing in to talk to us about it. Bomber, how are you?
Today. I'm good, fellas. What's happening?
Not too much. Tell us about this supplemental draft pick the Bombers picked up.
Yeah, he's a big body. Drew Walutarski, a young man who's 6'4", 220 pounds.
Wait. Can he skate, and does he have a left shot?
Yeah, I'll maybe look into that. He hasn't arrived in Winnipeg yet, as far as I've heard, but I expect him to join the Blue Bombers practice roster in relatively short order. It's that injury to Addison Richards suffered in training camp. He's still sporting a pretty heavy-duty brace on his right knee. It's that injury that kind of has the Blue Bombers, looking for Canadian pass catchers. You got Julian Fiola-Godino. He'll very likely be in the starting lineup on Saturday. Matt Coates missed all of training camp. I think it was the second or third day he suffered a lower body injury. He's been practicing for a few days now and is an option. But really beyond himself and two guys that they've signed off the street, Winnipegger Derek Yatchison and another big body, 6'4", 200 pounds, Brett Belasco, a third-round pick of the BC Lions just a couple years ago. The Lions cut him loose following training camp. They signed him as well. They're trying to just bring in as many Canadian bodies as they can to find pieces behind the veteran, Fiola-Godino. You know, lots of discussion coming into this season that the Bombers needed more of a playmaker at that position. They're really just trying to, skim through the sand right now, try to find a diamond in the rough and find players that can contribute.
I tell you what, man, looking at this cat, where it looks like they may well have found a diamond in the rough. You're talking about a guy that played in the Big Ten, started more than his fair share of games, almost 1,000 yards in his senior year. He looks like this could be the real deal here, but everywhere I see, he's listed from Santa Clara, California. How did the CFL determine he was Canadian? They asked him if they knew who the prime minister was. He said Trudeau, and they said, yeah, you get to be Canadian. How did this happen?
That's right. He prefers maple syrup on his pancakes over butter, I guess.
You're Canadian. Yeah. How'd that happen?
Yeah. I'm not totally sure. I haven't dug absolutely into it. What I've heard is that his mother was born in Montreal. The Canadian Football League has changed their designation rules over the last couple years about what makes you a national, in other words, a Canadian in the CFL. There's a lot of guys that have grown up, played football in Florida, in California, on the East Coast of the United States, wherever, but because they have a connection to Canada through immediate family, their mother, their father, or something to that effect, they're now designated as Canadians. And CFL teams, with that ratio being so important, are snatching these guys up. This is the third supplemental draft that the CFL has held this year since the regular draft back in March. It's interesting because, usually you get one supplemental draft, if any, in one season, but there were three players, separate players, that came up and had eligibility as Canadians, after the draft happened. So the Bombers spent a third-round draft pick on Drew Wolitarski, and it's a great price to pay. They have two third-round picks in 2018. They now have one. That second one came in the Drew Willey trade. It's the trade that keeps on giving. You get an all-star in TJ Heath. You get the first overall pick and a player that's going to contribute very soon in Faith the Kakati. And now you add another Canadian pass catcher that looks like he'll be able to join the team in short order as well. Just a deft trade by general manager Kyle Walters in sending Drew Willey to Toronto. He's since been cut. He's now a member of the Montreal Alouettes, so it says a lot about the value that they got in return for a quarterback.
You know, it's great. If you have a CFL team now, you almost want someone specifically to go find these guys who are Canadian that aren't really Canadian but somehow squeezed by the CFL requirements to be considered Canadian. As a Canadian, I think if that's the case, DB, and it's great that the Bombers are able to take advantage of the situation the way it's set up or defined now in the CFL, but because you have a parent who's Canadian, now that makes you Canadian, that kind of bugs me as a Canadian.
Yeah, no, I hear what you're saying. In a lot of cases, there's players that left Canada as infants, infantile in age, and, spend, as I said, all of their life playing football in the United States, and they hadn't even heard of the CFL. They they're not familiar with the game. They didn't know that opportunity was afforded to them, and now they've got nine general managers calling their agents saying, hey, if you want to come play football, we can pay you well to do it. It's not like you're an undrafted, like you're an American free agent, and you're making league minimum to try to get back to the NFL, and you're in that $52,000 range. If you're a rookie Canadian and a top flight one, say a first or second round pick, you might be making, 50% more than Americans coming off the street and coming up to the CFL.
Bomber, one more thing on this note. Why a third-round pick? I remember when Keto Pobla was picked up and it was a first-rounder. Yeah. Why is it a third-round pick?
So the supplemental draft is like an auction. It's like a bidding process. They offer a player, and then CFL general managers have an opportunity to bid on them. They'll say, I'll give a fifth-round pick. So let's just set up a hypothetical situation. The Toronto Argonauts, for just argument's sake, say they wanted to offer a third-round pick for this player, Drew Walutarski. Well, then the Blue Bombers could come in and say, well, okay, well, we want to give a second-round pick. And then the Ottawa Redblacks, Marcel Desjardins, can say, well, we want to give a first-round pick for that available player. Well, then they would win the supplemental draft. They would earn that player's rights and be able to sign him and bring him to the team. So it's like an auction. It's almost like fantasy football. Whoever wants to pay the price gets the player, and that's the case. In Keto Pobla's case, it was a first-round pick. In Garrett Wagoner's case a couple years ago with the Blue Bombers, it was a first-round pick. This time, the Blue Bombers offered a third, and nobody offered any better, so they got the player.
Give me a reason or something that you've seen over the last number of days here that can settle my nerves about the Bomber defense going into Saskatchewan, please.
I don't know if I can, Troy. A lot of people have concerns on this Blue Bombers defense. The preseason, it did not look particularly sharp. They didn't perform very well. They did not face a number one quarterback. They faced number twos in Saskatchewan and number twos against Edmonton as well. They allowed a lot of yards. They allowed a lot of points. But I asked Mike O'Shea, and I'm probably not going to push him too much more because, you know, I'm starting to get the eyes of fire from him. But, you know, he says they used the preseason as evaluation. They wanted to get a good look at a lot of players, and I totally understand that. That makes sense. They did make a lot of cuts on the defensive side of the football. We didn't see all of the starters play together at one time. There is a lot of attention being put on that middle linebacker spot. Sam Hurl, the Canadian out of the University of Calgary, looking to be the starting middle linebacker. It really does look like he'll be the man with the job on day one. But this is allowing them flexibility in other positions. Now they don't have to start Jake Thomas or Faith Akakiti on that defensive line. They can start someone like Corey Poop Johnson, who is a very disruptive player. Please pardon the pun. Have a lot of fun talking about Corey Poop Johnson. But, you know, it gives the Winnipeg Blue Bombers options to put the best players in at the, you know, at other positions. All eyes are going to be on Sam Hurl. All eyes are going to be on this Blue Bombers defense because last year they finished dead last in yards against. They finished dead last in the CFL in opponents' first downs and passing yards. They live and die by the takeaway. They led the league in interceptions, but people are very skeptical if that is sustainable. We'll get a good look on Saturday on Canada Day at 8 o'clock when this game goes live coast-to-coast at New Mosaic Stadium because Kevin Glenn, he wasn't flashy. The Saskatchewan Rough Riders offense, you know, they just got the job done. They moved the football effectively, and they were able to put points up. We'll see what the Blue Bombers defense can do against maybe not the most powerful offense in the CFL, but a very, very capable one.
Darren Bauman from TSN 1290 talking Bombers with us this morning on the Big Show, TSN 1290. Right before we let you go, Bomber, Matt Nichols held court yesterday. We ran some of his comments today. We'll hear from him again this morning on the Big Show. But what kind of a step forward can he take with this offense, in your mind, heading into the season?
I think he can take a significant step forward. Coming into a season as the undisputed number one quarterback, something he has never been afforded in his, 7 years in pro football. He's 29 years old, and people don't maybe rank him amongst the elite quarterbacks in the CFL, but he has all of the tools around him. An excellent receiving core with Dressler, Darvin Adams, LaDainian Washington, looking like a breakout player in this Blue Bombers offense. Clarence Denmark, all he seems to do is catch touchdown passes off the arm of Matt Nichols, 8 touchdowns last year. And Andrew Harris looking, frankly, fresh as a 30-year-old running back behind a very strong offensive line here in Winnipeg. It's Matt Nichols' opportunity to flourish, continuity under Paul Apolice and an offensive system returning again for 2017. I think this Blue Bombers offense can take a step forward. A lot of people are going to be expecting big things from them. They may need to score a lot of points for this team to be successful. So it's all up to Matt Nichols to start getting the job done on Saturday.
Great stuff, Darren. We appreciate your time as always. Thanks for doing this.
Always good to talk to you guys. Have a good morning.
Take care, DB. Hey, this Drew Wolitarski kid, he's no joke. Down playing Big Ten at Minnesota, right? So he's playing at a high level. He ranks ninth all-time with 125 catches at the school and 10th all-time in yards. That's a big-time program, man. This is no joke. He may well come up here and be quite impactful.
It's just I think he's legitimate. Yeah, I mean, I've seen this draft work before in the Canadian Football League. I'm just – so you bid a third-round pick. Like, full credit to Kyle Walters, but what's the rest of the CFL doing when they look at this? And like, how do they not go, I'll give a second-round pick, someone around the league?
Maybe the Bombers are the team that knew he was Canadian.
Well, that's what I mean. I'm wondering how many other teams actually knew about him, actually put a pick in, or if it was just like the Bombers, the only guys who did, and it was a third rounder, so they got him.
You wonder. I'd love to talk to Kyle Walters and the Bombers to find, like, how do you – who tells you about this?
You must contact Yeah, you must – they must have some kind of a source or a person down
something,
there that is like, hey, this kid has a Canadian – mom or dad,
fourth cousin.
Yeah, take a look.
As the decades go by, will the CFL get more and more relaxed with what makes you a Canadian?
Because to me, on paper, this is a first-round pick in the CFL draft.
Oh, absolutely. From a Big Ten school and having this kind of career there?
And I agree with you where this is like, if the Canadian line is going to be this blurry when it comes to players that are turned nationals. How excited are we that this kid's coming up here right now? If it's going to be this blurry, and eventually it's going to be, well, I went to Edmonton once when I was a kid for a week.
Yeah.
Like, are we just going to get to the point where we nix national, international, just make it?
Did you go down the
West? Come up.
Did you go down the West Edmonton Mall water slide more than once? Yes. Done. You're Canadian.
I got a half a mind to smack your face, Wicks.
It goes on, though.
Like, national violence.
I constantly tell the story when the Canadian men's soccer program had the German head coach, and he found a German soccer player whose only reason he was Canadian was because his dad was German and got a job as a janitor at the Canadian Air Force Base in Germany. So in order to work on the base as a janitor, they gave him a citizenship so he could get in on the base daily, and that's how they considered him Canadian.
That's the American soccer program was like that for quite some time with their European coach, right? Just finding ways to manufacture the connection to the country. It's. I wonder how far, like Wicks is saying, I wonder how far the CFL will take it to some point where it's very much so or completely diminished.
Your mother in Spain made out with an American tourist once. It was just making out. And I know you have a different father and they never married or anything, but you're now American. You can play in the U.S. national soccer team. I'll move on. Yeah. We'll take a break. We'll talk some hockey when we come back on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 is excited to support Canada 150 at the Forks Saturday, July 1st. That's this Saturday on Canada Day. Visitors will experience tons of free family-friendly programming at five stages around the Forks and experience a powwow and Indigenous storytelling at the Odina Celebration Circle and, of course, a stunning fireworks spectacle to cap things off at 11 p.m. For a complete lineup of over 50 acts and more, visit theforks.com. Or TSN1290.ca. The Big Show, Jim, Troy, and Brandon. Back into this free agency talk and the lines and everything and how we think it could work. And if you would augment the bottom six, if you could, the bottom three. Elliot Friedman reporting on his 30 thoughts that he puts out every week. The Jets interested, as well as Ottawa, at Dmitry Kulikov, the left-handed defenseman who played with Buffalo last year, 8 years in the league, seven with Florida. Offseason last year, he made 4.5 and salary was just over four on AAV. But we know the left-handed D is a need. We know the veteran goaltender or some experience is a need. But would you go out and I was saying Justin Williams or just some guys like that that are out there, and would you augment the bottom? And then we were talking, gentlemen, about, you know, how it plays out and if Kyle Connor can play. And I was saying I have him in the top six if he is on the team. And I don't know what you do. Like, it's Scheifele, Ehlers, Wheeler, Little, Laine, and then do you put Kyle Connor up there and make Perreault your third line center and have him with Armia? And
the Jets will not put Kyle or Adam Lowry as their fourth line center, I don't believe.
I think they would if they had the depth.
What have we seen? What have we seen from them to make you think that they are so completely committed to him? I just don't see it happening, man.
Well, yeah, I don't think they're committed to keeping him if they have depth and they have Perreault and Lowry. I don't see them committed to. And if Roslovic makes the roster, that's my whole thing about the whole. If you re-sign Brian Little this year, Perreault's got to go, because Perreault's A, going to get you something. He's that good of a player.
Well, not this year. He doesn't have to go, right? When you're talking about depth and impact, and I'm looking at the forwards, JT, I don't see where anybody coming in fits in to the forwards. You look at just the bottom six loosely. If it's going to be this, if I'll keep Perreault up on the second line with I've got eventually it going Ehlers, Scheifele, Laine, and then Perreault, Little, Wheeler. And then if you start talking the bottom six, go last year Matthias, Lowry, Armia, if that stays true, and then you got Kopp and either like Patan in the middle, possibly Roslovic in the middle, Dano, and if you bump Connor into that, so if you go Connor, Lowry, Armia, then you got Matthias moving down to the fourth, and then you got Kopp and Dano still, either maybe you can put Kopp in the middle, Dano on the right, however you're going to work it, but there's all kinds of forward depth with this team already. I don't think they need to look at anywhere to make it any stronger necessarily.
I think putting Adam Lowry to the fourth line would solve a lot of their problems inside the top nine, but I just don't see it happening. Like, yeah, they're grooming him to be their prototypical defensive shutdown centerman to go up against the other team's top lines and maybe free up one of the other lines in the top nine to kind of have a matchup advantage at some point on the ice. It's not what I would do, but they've put so much into him at this point, and if you can only go on what the team has done in the past, what the coaching staff has done with the player previously, I just don't see how he goes from almost 17 minutes a game to all of a sudden down to 10-9 on the fourth line.
Well, I think the minutes spread out more if you augment something that comes in here. But it goes to my whole theory. There's too many centers here. If Roslovic is ready and you have Kopp and Matthias is back and Perreault can play the wing, but he's a center, Lowry, Little, Scheifele, like that's where I continuously go to if there's a move to be made. What team doesn't need a center in the National Hockey League, and how many do the Jets have? And the Roslovics are unproven. And Lowry, I think I agree they want to keep him. They're not going to deal him. So then, you know, you look at the depth. If Roslovic and Kyle Connor are ready to make this team, somebody's got to go. Or one of them are ready to make the team and they have to start the year at the Moose.
Well, not necessarily, I don't think. You would have, if Roslovic and Connor are both ready to go, then you can take one of those guys out. Probably if you go by last year, it would be Dano being a healthy scratch sort of thing. You just have one healthy scratch with the forwards if both those guys are ready to go.
Oh, that's true too. But like, one of them's not going to be playing. Somebody's not going to be playing nightly. We'll take a break and talk some more hockey with Gus Katsaros and free agency next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290, Alter Ego Sports, and Tim Hortons are proud to present the TSN 1290 Street Team, popping up at Winnipeg's best events all summer long. We'll be at concerts, sporting events, charity events, and more. We'll be bringing our Spin to Win prize wheel to select events and giving you the chance to win great stuff like tickets to Bruno Mars or a Cannondale Quick 8 bicycle from Alter Ego Sports. Here's where you can find us over the next little bit. University of Winnipeg Westman Golf Tournament tomorrow, the 29th. Canada 150 at the Forks this Saturday, July the 1st, with fireworks at 11 p.m., of course. TSN's Jocks and Jockeys Night at Assiniboia Downs Wednesday, July 5th, and MTS Super Spike July 21st and 22nd at Maple Grove Rugby Park. For more information on these great events and the TSN 1290 Street Team, visit tsn1290.ca. The Big Show, Jim, Troy, and Brandon. Boss Pizza Fan Line coming up at 9 o'clock. Get your thoughts on free agency and everything else that's going in and around the National Hockey League. Of course, the Bombers kick off their season on Saturday as well. And Mark Mathot and his comments that we ran earlier in the program about his no-trade or limited 10-team no-trade clause. We're going to talk more free agency now in hockey with our good friend Gus Katsaros from McKeensHockey.com. Gus, how are you?
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, we're just discussing today. Of course, Elliot Freeman's 30 points yesterday included the fact that both Ottawa and Winnipeg interested or talking to Buffalo Sabres defenseman Dmitry Kulikov. What are your thoughts on his numbers and the season he had and how he could potentially fit in with the Jets?
Well, I mean, from his Florida days, what he was a puck-moving, rushing defenseman. The mobility, I think, is the one element that I think might have been hurt a little too much last season, which affected his results, which affected the numbers, which affected a bit more of a negative overview rather than what he actually is. If Winnipeg is looking for a little bit of mobility, and again, Kulikov would be a depth addition. It's not like he would step into a top four and be one of those top four performers. He's a guy that could probably do that periodically, but you're looking more at a depth acquisition here. But the key point is mobility, and this is what the NHL is about. It's about your defenseman being able to skate, support the rush, get in there, and get back into position. Kulikov's defensive game has matured a bit. I wouldn't call it polished, but it's better than what it was when he first came into the league. So they would get a pretty good depth addition as long as they just don't overpay on term and really high dollar amounts.
If Joe Thornton goes to Los Angeles, Gus, does it surprise you? I know he's got sweet mitts and he's going to get his points and all the rest of it, but you're talking about a team that was getting killed in transition last year and it was just notably slower than they needed to be. Bringing in Joe Thornton certainly doesn't help that situation. Do you think it's a good move for the Kings?
Well, the main point around the Kings now is what are they going to do when they're not playing a Sutter-based system. The actual prevailing thought is that the Kings are a heavy team. They play a quote-unquote heavy game. They really get in along the boards. They punish their opponents and grind them down. That's not necessarily a Joe Thornton game. His is more of a finesse, regardless of the fact that he's pretty big. And so now, what is this new coaching staff going to implement in L.A. that's going to be very different from what they were doing under Sutter? If they maintain some of those components, you're going to see a lot of outside gain. You're going to see a lot of pucks thrown into corners. You're still going to see that heavy board game. Thornton throwing pucks into scoring chance areas and hopefully somebody being there to capitalize, that would be the key points to bringing in a guy like that. But from an overall perspective, he's not necessarily going to change the way that you play. He's going to be a supplement rather than a game breaker. And I'm not really sure that LA is really looking for something in that ilk. The main thing I thought that happened with LA was the lack of skill. They need to inject some skill and get a little bit more inside game going. That's not necessarily Joe Thornton either. He's more of a perimeter guy who gets pucks into the hard scoring areas. So I'm not sure that there's a distinct fit there. If he does end up there, what I think we'll see is a distinct difference in styles than what LA has been playing over the Sutter regime.
Gus, Kevin Shattenkirk is interesting because he didn't want to go to Tampa Bay in a trade. He said that the feeling is he just wants to play for the Rangers. He goes to Washington and in my mind didn't do much. He was on the third pairing. He got lit up. Where does he fit in a free agency? Who's interested in him and what can he bring to a team? I know the offensive numbers are there, but as a defenseman?
Well, I don't think that Shattenkirk is I mean, if you're looking for a prime defensive defenseman, that's not necessarily what you're going to get. But he's a wizard with the puck. He can move it. He could rush with it. He's a fantastic player within that 2 or 3 foot zone inside the blue line. And that, I think, is a key point because Alex Pietrangelo also does that. And he's probably one of the better in the league. So I think that the Blues, when they ended up getting rid of Shattenkirk, realized that they have similar skill sets in those two players that they might be able to exploit with Pietrangelo. Now, the team that acquires Shattenkirk for whatever reason is going to get that same dynamic. They're going to get a player that plays that point very, very well at 5-on-5 and on the power play. Defensively, I mean, players' defensive skills are sometimes, I think, a little overstated. You could implement enough of a system and allow players to flow fluidly within that system through their structure to be able to provide some type of a fulcrum or something to help in the defensive game. So I don't really think that it's going to be that much of a detriment if that's what people are looking at from Shattenkirk. I think as long as he's just able to adapt to whatever they're trying to play, he'll fit in defensively. But what he offers offensively really outweighs any negative points or any type of negativity that comes from a lack of elite defensive skills. So I think you're going to get a premier offensive guy. They're going to get somebody that's going to move the puck, rush it up the ice if you have to, outlet if you have to, with an array of different type of offensive skills inside the offensive zone. And I think the only thing that's going to happen is you're going to see an overpay on term, probably an overpay on salary as well.
The Stars are one of the teams most likely the Jets will have to stay in front of to secure a playoff spot next year. Gus, Hitchcock, Bishop, and now Mathot, how much better do you anticipate the Stars being?
Well, I expect them to be, well, right off the bat, that goaltending situation has been abysmal for the last few years to the degree that it's probably cost them points in the regular season standings. And you know, defensively in the playoffs, they just haven't been up to snuff to what a contender should actually be. So two things have happened here. The addition of Bishop is huge because it solidifies your crease. At the same time, the addition of Hitchcock will change a little bit of how the Stars approach their defensive game. I felt that what you would do is just kind of collapse and protect the house kind of a bit, which allowed for a lot of movement on the outside. Teams with explosive outside speed were easily getting past them. And, you know, when you don't have exactly the stellar goaltending that you require, games were easily being lost in that regard. So I think the structure that Hitchcock brings, and Mathot is going to be, he'll probably end up being used a little bit more than I feel he should be, but he'll end up being a vital cog there because he'll add that element of stability. That blue line is still young and green too, so they need something to kind of wrap their heads around, and Mathot's probably one of those players that they'd be able to leverage off. So I think that Hitchcock will give them something more definitive to work with defensively. They're pretty decent up front. They don't necessarily need a lot of scoring issues. They don't have a lot of scoring issues, but what Hitchcock brings defensively as a system is more important than the individual components that the Stars have brought in.
And in your mind, Gus, is Mathot the best fit with Klingberg there?
You know, you kind of look at it from the perspective of, you know, he was there with Carlson and perhaps he should be. No, I don't really think so. I think that Klingberg could be Well, let me qualify that. You're right. They could be a decent pairing. However, that's not necessarily how I would look at it first. I think that Klingberg is good enough on his own that he just needs a support player. And Mathot could probably do well on a second or third pairing or combination thereof, where he's able to be a more stable defensive presence rather than being a stable presence just for one player to try to excel and do things that other teams might target on. So he might be a decent enough pairing, but I think that they would probably do better to use him in a different pairing rather than with Klingberg.
Talk to me about Neil Yakupov, Gus. Does he have a chance of ever even like reaching any degree of the potential once thought? Or is he just... Yeah, is he like, are you almost able to more or less bury him at this point?
It's incredible, the skill level there. There's just so much that he's able to bring to the table. A couple of key points, I think, is one, I think he's reverted to a little bit more of an outside or a perimeter game. He doesn't get into those scoring areas with and without the puck, so I think it limits a little bit of his abilities to work with the skills that he brings to the table. I'm not really sure that teams themselves feel that they would be able to give him a prime roster spot for him to actually run with and be successful. So I feel that at this point, what you're going to see is the team pick him up as a depth addition, probably someone that wants a little bit more of a skill level on their lower roster. And, you know, in that essence, with a lower element of quality of competition, perhaps with a skill set around him that requires somebody to be elevated and get above and beyond what everybody else is producing, you know, he could actually thrive. I wouldn't expect him to be a star at this point, but if you're looking for a skillful, non-really threatening jolt to your lower roster, someone that's just going to end up playing there that could afford to put pucks into the net, I can't see why a team wouldn't take a flyer on him. It wouldn't cost much, at least if you're not really looking at a big salary or a long term. It's a decent gamble.
Gus Katsaros from McKean'sHockey.com joining us on the Big Show this morning, TSN 1290, to discuss some free agency. A lot of reports maybe that the Jets very interested in Brian Elliott. What are your thoughts on how he would fit in on this team here in Winnipeg?
Well, he would be a backup at this point, and I guess he would be a decent support, something that somebody who's been through the trenches and being able to work as a tandem with whatever goaltending duo is there. Goaltenders aren't exactly my forte, so I don't really know what kind of skills he brings.
Everybody says that, Gus. Every time we talk goal, everybody says, they're not my forte. I don't really know how they work. I don't understand them. You're not the only one.
Yeah, it's because they're voodoo. You don't know. You just don't know. Year to year, there could be such a variance in performance that, you know, how much does the skill set really matter when there's so many other different variables. So, yeah, goaltending is really tough on my end. But if you're looking to bring in some kind of a veteran presence, I mean, you can't go wrong with Brian Elliott. At the same time, you know, there's a lot of failure on that, too. He's gone through a lot of trenches. He's gone through a lot of disappointments in his career, too. So maybe perhaps that's one element that he can kind of bring and say, you know, this happened at this point in time, this happened at this point in time. Perhaps seeing the signs and being able to guide some of the younger players through. So to me, bringing in a guy like Brian Elliott would be more for a veteran leadership standpoint rather than for performance standpoints.
Great stuff, Gus. We appreciate it. As always, should be a very interesting weekend. Thanks for doing this.
Pleasure's mine. Enjoy the free agency period.
Thanks so much, Gus. Awesome stuff, man.
Isn't that? I laugh at that every time. So, because over the past 2 weeks, all the shows here on TSN 1290 and all the shows I listen to elsewhere, they try to talk goaltending with anybody, and they're always like, "Well, goalies aren't my forte. I really don't know how they."
Well, Gus is always that though. We know that from talking to Gus that you just don't get in too much to goalies. And hey, man, if that's not an area that you, and when he's breaking down games and all the rest of it, he's always made it clear to us that's just not his area. And all the voodoo, of course, as well, right?
Yeah. And you guys might have missed this while you were talking with Gus, but there's been some reports about Connor McDavid's contract extension with the Oilers and what that might look like. Do you guys want to give it a guess?
12, 14?
I saw what Ryan Rashog put out.
There's
yesterday.
No way it's more than 12 or 14.
8 years. $13.25 million.
Yeah. And anybody going to say? Now, the one thing that, no, I don't think anyone's going to say, how in the world can you come to that number for him? Because from a skill sense, yeah. But if you're Connor McDavid, and hey man, go make as much money as you can. But on when you have to deal with the salary, like what position do you put your team in going forward to go win a cup if you're going to absorb that much of the salary cap?
Well, here's how Cap Friendly is breaking it down. At $13.25 million, McDavid's annual salary would represent 17.67% of the $75 million salary cap. The max permissible to occupy from one player in the CBA is 20%.
Yeah, and
so
remember
you're literally
Steve
just
Yzerman,
over 2% away from
Steve Yzerman when talking about Stamkos's contract and the whole talk about, hey man, we don't know if we want to sink that much of the percentage into one player. Like, you're brilliant, dude, but how much do you handcuff your team and thwart your opportunity to go ever hoist the cup because of this?
How much money does that player make for that team, though?
Yeah, well, and the other thing,
well, that
too,
doesn't matter. You're not talking revenue coming in. You're talking the team has this to spend because of the salary cap.
The thing too, though, is who has the bargaining power in this situation? Like Edmonton has nothing at all.
Well, that's my point here.
Like Connor McDavid could have. I mean, I don't know how much more he could have taken them to the cleaners, but they were kind of at his whim there, weren't they? And the other thing too is, like, at least you get it to 8 years. because a lot of these guys are looking at 5-year contracts, right, where they get to free agency at 27 and then look out at that point.
You have to get it to 8 years, because the flip side of that is what I meant by how much he brings into the team. So say you go $10 million, 10-5, and he goes, no, well, then I only want a 4- or 5-year deal. You're talking about how much you make off the guy as well. I know it doesn't pertain to the cap, but that you have to sign this guy.
Yeah, but paying him, that's a different problem. Right, paying him the money, getting the money to pay him is different. And to say, yeah, he brings in that money, that's not the issue. The issue is, how can you construct the team around him when one player absorbs that much of the available money that it can spend to build a team? Can you build a championship level team when you have one player absorbing, 17% of the salary cap?
17.6%.
This is basketball. Right? One guy can't get it done like that.
The other question is, what do you pay Patrick Laine?
Oh, great.
What do you pay Austin Matthews?
And that's what everyone's talking about, the repercussions of everyone now using this as a barometer, right?
So I don't think Laine and Matthews, in even a year from now, get what McDavid's going to get. He's already got a Hart Trophy and a scoring title to him. However, what it does is it's more than what Kane and Taves are making. What this does is brings it up to the 10, you know...
Yeah.
Well, you want to lock up Laine for 8 years. That's what you want to do. And you probably want to do it before the third year of his entry level. I think next offseason is when you sit there and go, your third year is still in play, but after that, so you have him for 9 years basically on an 8-year deal. But that bumps the money up from a potential 8 or 9 for a second contract for him to probably close to 11.
To me, what it does in a more macro sense is, and this was discussed after the last CBA, is that you are seeing the middle class of the NHL disintegrate before our eyes. You're going to have all kinds of, or a number of these upper end massive contracts, and then a bunch of entry level and real low contracts that are forced into this equation because of those large contracts.
We got to take a break. We'll discuss this more and tee up the Boss Pizza fan line when we come back on the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
What greater gift is there than the gift of life? That's exactly what every blood donation delivers. Blood and blood products are a critical part of everyday medical care, including major surgeries, medical procedures, cancer treatments, and managing disease. This Canada Day, Canadian Blood Services is hoping you can make a donation. The Canadian Blood Services location at 777 William Avenue will open at 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. To book your appointment, you can call 1-888-2-DONATE, visit blood.ca. And walk-ins are always welcome at 777 William Avenue. This is the Big Show on TSN 1290. Jim, Troy, and Brandon. Boss Pizza Fan Line going to be open in 4 minutes' time, 780-1290, or text 1290-90 with standard message rates applying. We started the day talking about Mark Mathot and his thoughts on his no-trade clause, and thank God he had it and felt he earned it after 10 years, and he didn't want to... 10 years ago said, I would never say no to any team, but felt after 10 years he's earned the right to sort of exercise limited, 10 teams that he could choose where he went to.
It's the essence of the entitled athlete to me. You've got guaranteed freaking contracts in the NHL, and that should be more than enough to make an athlete thrilled that you can sign a 6-, 2-year, 8-year deal, and it's guaranteed cake coming at you. That is mind-blowing to me. The cherry on top with the no-move clauses, no-trade clauses, to me, are catastrophic for leagues. A league has to take care of all the branches on its tree, that being the organizations. And when you allow no-move clauses, no-trade clauses, you stifle and choke out your undesirable or those that are perceived to be markets within your league. And it doesn't help with parity, and parity should be any league's ultimate goal for its organizations. I can't stand them; they should not exist, and I hate seeing this one utilized as well.
Yeah, I agree, and I think it maybe goes more to the point of why would they be good for the league? Why would all these no trades and no moves be good for the league? They're good for specific players in terms of some of their security and that sort of thing, but. I mean, who doesn't love a blockbuster trade? Who doesn't love seeing their team shake things up a little bit? And you're kind of choking the entertainment value out of a sport that already is limited in what they deliver in that aspect.
Also, just breaking news, Ryan Rashog was on this yesterday. He's on it again today, and Elliot Friedman has weighed in. Oilers' Connor McDavid looking at an 8-year deal worth $13.25 million a year. We'll talk about that. And the Bombers, we heard from Matt Nichols today. They kick off their season. What are you expecting from the offense and the Bombers this year? And the defense, of course. Anything and everything coming up on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290 on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN1290.
Back on the Big Show, TSN 1290, and leave your back gate unlocked because TSN's coming over on select evenings throughout the summer. TSN 1290 will back up the truck with a portable party for up to 25 people, catering by Qdoba Mexican Eats, including a burrito bowl hot bar with tortillas so you can make tacos and an abundance of three cheese queso, beverages including a sampling of Tallgrass Vodka, Winnipeg's only grain-to-bottle vodka produced by Capital K Distillery, a family pack of fireworks to light up your night, courtesy of Archangel Fireworks, an iGrill 2 digital app connected thermometer for grand prize winner and provided by Lux Barbecue Company, and a hot tub for you to soak in over the course of a week provided by our friends at Oasis Leisure Center. We'll also have the TSN 1290 crew on site to help serve and set up. Parties will happen Thursday evenings from now until August. Enter online, tsn1290.ca, and we could be seeing you very soon. Jim, Troy, and Brandon. And the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290, lots to talk about today. We ran Mark Mathot's comments on his no trade. What are your thoughts on no trades in the National Hockey League? Are they earned, as he said, after 10 years in the league and he didn't want to move? So the fact that he had to and he had a contract that was valid, he should have some say in where he could possibly go. He had a 10-team limited no trade. Jets development camp, of course, we talked about Kyle Connor and where he may fit in to the lineup next year, and if on free agency they should go get other people. We also heard from Matt Nichols, your thoughts on the Bombers, anything and everything coming up on the Big Show. Norm, you're kicking us off today. Go ahead.
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you this morning?
Good, thanks.
Hey, I was going to say about the Central Division here with the Winnipeg Jets. Boy, they sure are making, like the other teams in the division are sure pushing the Jets to the limit of not making the playoffs again this year. You think they're doing that purposely in a way just to let Chevy make him think that maybe that he should hold back another year before he goes for it? But I think Winnipeg Jets should go for it. They should try to improve their team at least by a couple of better players somewhere in their lineup, probably defensively and, well, goalie for sure. But if there's no pushback by Chevy, I'm going to be a bit disappointed. I don't know about you guys.
And by pushback, you mean signing?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
They got to upgrade a bit.
I think literally everyone who's a fan of the Jets is in the boat with you, man. And you're talking about bolstering the D-core and getting another goaltender in for sure, right, to complement Hellebuck. At the very least, that's what needs to happen.
I don't think they're doing it on purpose. I think they're trying to win the Stanley Cup.
If they don't, they won't make the playoffs. I'll tell you that right now.
That's what it looks like.
It's going to be interesting because we've done this dance before, Norm, and if you think the Jets are making the postseason, who isn't that made it? And then you look at the other teams in the division, like you said, like, are we all in agreement that Dallas is going to be in the playoffs?
No, but I'll say that they'll be better. I don't know. Same thing to Dallas. If Dallas is in, who's out? That's a nasty-ass battle royale going on right there. You tell me what three teams for sure in there. Nashville, I'm going to say for sure is in, and as I tail off and get a little bit reluctant to make that commitment. But other than that, who's for sure?
Well, what's the difference between Dallas, St. Louis, and the Jets right now?
I don't know.
And Chicago.
Well, Chicago's still Chicago.
I want
you're going to paint Chicago outside the line. They got swept.
I don't buy it. Chicago got swept by Nashville.
But won the West.
Who went to the Cup Final and played out of their minds. They ended up with 109 points, JT. Isn't that more important?
I'm not saying they're awful. I'm just saying I could see them falling off.
And missing the playoffs. Because people say they got swept. Well, who swept them? Hello?
Yeah, but Nashville was the last seed. They didn't have a very good regular season and barely made the playoffs.
Well, they sure flicked the switch.
So once they're in the playoffs, yes. But there was a lot of talk that, I'm just saying, like I don't think Chicago is going to be as elite as they have been.
They're like the Patriots to me. Like I want to count them out every year. Then they come back and even I don't like the trades they made this offseason. They'll probably still get 100+ points
until you knock them out of that somewhere in the top. Like you're telling me, you think they're going to be out of a playoff spot? Anybody? I see
Dallas making the playoffs this year. I don't know. I don't know about Chicago. I don't know about St. Louis.
St. Louis is the team for me that drops out, but that would also include the Jets making a couple moves over the next week or so to bolster their chances as well.
And St. Louis, who got better, you know, with Yo, like St. Louis is looking at thinking they're going to be better than the, like, gee whiz, it's going to be brutal. That's for sure. That's the one for sure.
And Colorado. Oh wait, never mind. Colorado, we're okay.
Thanks for the call, Norm. We appreciate it. Who's next on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290?
Hi, Jim.
Oh, it's sweet Cosmic Mother, Bob. How are you?
Excellent, Jim. How's yourself?
I too find myself well today.
Hello, Troy.
Bobby, you always warm my heart and make me smile, man.
Right on. Hello, Brandon.
Hello, sir.
Yeah, just three quick questions for you guys. The Bombers' offensive game would be based on a ground attack, right?
I would not say so.
No?
No. Complemented by a ground attack.
And question number two, their passing game would be based on speed or intricate motion, something like a Hank Stram kind of deception thing. Would it be based on speed or just or the actual plays, their passing game?
That's I would say more so based on the intricacies of the plays than speed, although speed is a fantastic compliment.
And I guess Denmark would be a burner, right?
I don't think Clarence Denmark is known to be a burner. I think more a precise type route runner than a burner.
Oh, kind of like a Terry Evanson.
Sure.
And my third.
Good reference.
My third and concluding. There seems to be a slight defect defensively.
How oh, was that ever polite and gentle?
How would they establish awareness as a defensive unit on account of that?
Well, like awareness is almost like, if they were sharks and the quarterback was blood, sort of like go get that, attack it.
Well, you know that certain. I'm sure you're aware, Troy, that certain unity that a defensive team needs. Correct.
Yeah.
I was, you know, intimating that perhaps they're just missing a little bit of unity.
Well, I think they're tight, man, and a good, strong, like a good cohesive unit.
Uh-huh.
I think they're tight, man, but they've got to find a way. I think what is absolutely key, and I think everyone will agree with this, that they have got to become more disruptive as a group. And maybe it's not just the front seven, but it's like they need to create some exotic blitz aspects of the defense. So that, and bring it, and when it's being brought, that the quarterback can't decipher where it's coming from very easily. They have got to disrupt the quarterback bunch this year.
And obviously, Pooh's going to help.
Pooh always helps.
Poohing always helps, yeah.
That big defensive guy.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And they need some of the electricity we're getting back from you, Bob, on this line.
I think it's AC and DC. But always a pleasure, fellas.
The pleasure is ours. Thank you, Bob.
Take care, man.
Cosmic Bob on the Boss Pizza Fan Line. That was early today. 780-1290.
It's a heck of a start.
He must have an appointment somewhere. 780-1290 if you want to weigh in on the conversations we're having, of course, with the Jets. And the other and the Bombers, of course, their season opener this Saturday. The other thing we're talking about is this whole Connor McDavid thing. Of course, TSN's Ryan Rashog going with it, and Elliot Friedman's now weighing in and stuff. And Elliot Friedman did some math comparing if Connor McDavid gets an eight-year salary or deal, which he's reported to get from Ryan Rashog, at $13.25 million per, it equates to 17.67% of the salary cap. Now, under the CBA, a player can make no more than 20% of your annual salary cap, which at this year is $75 million. Friedman did some math, said Crosby, Malkin's second deals consumed 15.3% of the cap. So if the cap is flat in 2018-19 and McDavid is at 17.6, there should be movement to keep that in line, which basically is equating to the same kind of second-year deal or second deals that Crosby and Malkin had.
And you brought this up, Wicks, where normally you see guys in their first sort of something quasi-big, they'll just go like 5 years. And why McDavid doesn't have to do that is because even at the end of this 8 years, he's 28. So there's cash in here, and then bam, another biggie when he's 28, right? If he was 3 years older or something like that, there's no way, I don't think, he would have go for an 8 year here. But just because of his age, it allows him to do that, and he's going to come up ripe at the end of this 8 years, arguably like still sniffing around his prime at 28, and bam, deliver another max contract at that point in time.
Yeah, it's interesting looking back at those because, I mean, Crosby's was also a 12-year deal. That was back when you could kind of go up and above, that yeah. sort of thing. Ovechkin, when he signed, was 19% of the cap in 2008. Now, the interesting part of those deals, though, was that was kind of done at a time when the cap was still growing and it was still moving forward. And right now, the salary cap has kind of plateaued.
Stagnated, yeah.
So you wonder, like, you just wonder about that. If Edmonton management is that forward-looking, where they think that, okay, well, if the cap keeps going up or if it starts to go up again, this deal will be just fine. But if it stays at where it's at right now, or if it goes
Heaven
down
help.
At all,
yeah.
then like that will become a big, big problem for them because those Ovechkin, Crosby, Malkin deals, they can work out now because they're still being relatively fairly paid when it comes to what market value is.
It is real neat, isn't it? If you put yourself in McDavid's position, guys, and ask, you know, as an elite player or the elite player of the league, and you know dang well that he's got a sound understanding of the implications of absorbing that much of the salary cap, like how much do you put into taking as much as you can and weighing that against allowing the organization to build around you to go be a Stanley Cup team. You know, like that whole balance thing is interesting, huh?
Well, Leon Draisaitl is going to need a contract too. And yeah, I mean, definitely.
What do you think Chiarelli's thinking? How much, like before this, but after this, the new contract here for McDavid, boys, he looks at the Lucic contract and goes, boy, was that a mistake.
Yeah, yeah,
like
for sure.
It's that much more of a mistake now.
That's what's going to handcuff you. The McDavid one won't handcuff you. It's the Lucic's of the world that will handcuff you when you're doing this.
You got to be absolutely perfect when yeah. it comes to the supporting cast. You can afford to pay some of these guys. You can afford to pay both him and Draisaitl and maybe a defenseman and Talbot whenever his deal comes up. But it's basically the other 80% of your roster where you can't have a misstep. And that's what hurt the Blackhawks eventually, right? Where they had a couple of missteps and they had to trade Teravainen, prospects, picks, and it's kind of slowly coming back to haunt them.
And you need a steady flow of 4, 5, yeah. 6 ELCs as a part of the equation too, right?
Well, that's a debate on Twitter now amongst like Craig Custance from from the Athletic of Detroit now, used to be with ESPN, and Friedman and Ryan Rashog and Jason Gregoire from TSN 1260 in Edmonton. The debate is that basically you have to win when these guys are on their first or second contracts. The idea of giving these guys a third contract, these generational players are calling them, and winning isn't really in the cards. And that's sort of what's happened right now with Chicago. They're in their third contracts with Taves and Kane. And they're 10 plus mil, and can they sort of get back to
well, can they win another championship with those third contracts? The debate on Twitter right now amongst those reporters is the argument that you have to win with these generational players in their first or second contract, or else it's just not going to work.
And you can apply a lot of these understandings and thoughts to the Winnipeg Jets, right, as their young stars get a little bit older. And I tell you what, man, after McDavid sets the bar at this height, looking at Mark Scheifele's contract for the next 7 years still at 6.125, like, boy, is that's going to grow pretty quickly into being contract of the NHL, right, along like with a Duncan Keith type of a thing. That's just ridiculous.
Like, and that's the other thing that with the Line A thing. Are you in Winnipeg a year or two away of Line A making more money than Scheifele?
Yes.
No doubt. Like that's what Chevy got away with here for Scheifele. He might be up on charges at the end of this year. There's a robbery involved.
There's a minute chance that he almost doubles it too in terms of yearly salary. Like, because like you said, Jim, he 10.5 with the Kane and Taves. If Line A kind of continues his progression and he pots 40 plus the next couple of years, like you're probably starting that with an 11 and maybe moving up to $12 million a year.
We'll take a break and talk about this and everything else on the best show, on the best show, on the big show.
That's the best doggone show. There's our name.
I'm usually not that boisterous or arrogant. I really meant big, not best. On the big show on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 and Robertson College present the return of the 10K Summer Selfie. We have $10,000 in cash prizes to award select selfie takers across Manitoba, and you could be one of the recipients. To enter, take a really good selfie at some point during the summer and post it before Thursday, August 31st to Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram using the hashtag 10K Summer Selfie. The $10,000 prizes, a breakdown like this: $5,000 for Selfie of the Summer presented by Robertson College. And then $1,000 for each of the following: Best Animal Selfie presented by Assiniboia Park Zoo. Best Food and Drink Selfie presented by Booster Juice. Best Hair Selfie presented by Aura Hair Group. Best Outdoor Selfie presented by Lacoste Garden Center. And Best Smile Selfie presented by Toddlers to Teens. For more information, visit tsn1290.ca. Back on the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki, and the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290, if you want to weigh in on the conversation. Lots to do with the no-trade moves. We'll get to some of the comments on Twitter in just a minute, but I'll replay the Mark Mathot comments. The defenseman from Ottawa was picked up by Las Vegas in the expansion draft. Several teams interested in his services. He had a 10-team limited no-trade that included all six Canadian teams, including here in Winnipeg. Here's Mark Mathot on TSN 1200 in Ottawa on his thoughts on his no-trade clause.
You know, there were teams reaching out, so to speak, and I just, you know, I'm in a position where I don't want to burn any bridges by saying no. You feel bad saying no to teams, like as if I'm at a point in my career now that I can do that, where 10 years ago I never would imagine saying no to anybody. But, you know, I worked hard to get that 10-team no trade in my contract, and thank God I have it, because it allowed me to dictate a little bit where I wanted to go play. And I think this isn't something that I asked for. I didn't want to move. I didn't want to have to uproot my family and go somewhere else in the middle of a contract, but here we are, and I've got to deal with it. So it was a situation that wasn't very pleasant, but I've got a ton of support around me, and it worked out.
And you disagree with that, the fact that he said, like, I've sort of earned this after 10 years and I didn't ask to be traded. I had a contract in Ottawa and
yeah, like,
all that.
So you get to pick where you're going. You got to uproot your family and all the rest of it. And you get to handpick the city where you're going to go to. Thank God I had it. Like, to me, it's such an entitlement aspect of pro sports, where I just feel real strongly against it. I felt like that as a player. It doesn't matter what league you're talking about. To me, the privilege of playing pro sports and the overall general health for whatever league that you're taking part in It depends on absolutely that league being able to enforce parity and fairness and equality of all of the branches on that tree of the league you play in being the organizations. So no specific franchise should have an upper hand over another because of things of this nature where players can dictate to you where they're going to go or not. To me, it cannibalizes the integrity and the well-being of any league. It hurts small markets or it's undesirable markets, no question about it. You're talking about a league already where the players get what I think is a ridiculous – they get guaranteed contracts. That is amazing to me. I don't know how that came to be, but the PA somehow finagled guaranteed contracts. And on top of it all, I can tell you where I'm going to go or where I'm not going to go if I have earned it, as we just heard from Mark Mathot. I think they're brutal. There's no way that they should exist.
Your thoughts on the no trades, your thoughts on the Jets, Kyle Connor, does he make the roster, and the Bombers. Pardon me. Anything and everything coming up on The Big Show, TSN 1290, the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 and Robertson College present Manitobaville. We're awarding $25,000 to put towards a project that enhances one special Manitoba community. To enter, rally friends and family in your community and make a video about your hometown. Tell us how $25,000 could make it an even better place to be at and live in. Is there something your community needs? Is there an existing project that requires more money? Can it enhance tourism and the lives of people who stay there? If so, record a video telling us how your hometown would spend $25,000 and send it to us at tsn1290.ca before noon on Friday, July the 14th. 10 finalists will be revealed on Monday, July the 24th. Then the public will vote for a winner to receive the $25,000. Manitobaville, make your hometown even prouder, presented by Robertson College and proudly supported by Chicken Chef, Star Ready to Move Homes, the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, Merrick Contractors. For more information and official rules and regulations, visit tsn1290.ca. Back to the Boston Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290. Jeremy, you're on The Big Show with Jim, Troy, and Brandon. Go ahead.
Hey, morning, guys. How you doing?
Good, thanks.
I guess, Troy, I agree with you with respect to the no-trade clause and how it affects the parity and handcuffs teams. But I guess at the same time, I think there's a human element to it, and the later you get in your career, the better chance there is that you got kids and a family, and it's tough moving your kids around like that. So, I'd be okay with it if they had something, maybe like a graduated system where after 10 years, you're allowed to put maybe five teams on a no trade list. And then after, if you're in for 15, then you can move it up to 10. And, for guys that have been in the league longer than have kids and stuff, and it's tough to move them around, then maybe that works. And maybe that sort of puts a bit of a limitation on it. It doesn't handcuff as many teams.
But Jeremy, the only thing I counter that with, okay, so give a guy five teams, give a guy 10 teams. Well, they're still moving. You're still uprooting your family going somewhere. You just get to pick the cities that are a little bit more appealing to you and therefore probably still hurting those small market / unattractive cities that might exist that your family could still have a wonderful life in.
Yeah, I know. I agree with you. I'm just saying it is what it is now, and maybe it just needs to be limited a bit more, you know, right? So you're not... You know, these guys don't get to handpick as much. It's only five teams, then you still gotta go somewhere, but you still get some say in it after you've been in the league for 10 years and maybe put in some time.
Like, my thought is interesting to me because, like he sort of pointed out, Ottawa signed him to this and he wanted to be there. He didn't want to leave Ottawa. So you're now going to ask me to leave, and he had options. Like he said, 10 years ago, I wouldn't have said no to anybody or even thought I had the notion of it. But as 10 years go by and you sort of build up, like in any business, you sort of build up, you know, some credit to where you are. And if you're the ones who want to move me, I understand what it does to the rest of the league. I get that. But like in free agency, there's a lot of teams selling these things as on your contract that we'll give you a full no move because we desperately want you here more so than the other teams. So if you sign that and then 2 years later they want to move you out, who's really the one at fault here?
Well, there's no one at fault if they're offering up. But the question is, You're so funny the way, to me, you present your debates and arguments sometimes. But, it, like, it's they shouldn't exist. They shouldn't be allowed to be utilized as currency within a league. It just – I just can't stand them. And even if you only have five teams that are allowed to do that, which five markets or teams do you think that's going to change Winnipeg's position with any? Nope. Winnipeg will still be number one on the no-move clause if you only have five teams. It hurts the smaller markets of any league. It hurts the integrity and the parity aspect of the league.
See, in a couple of years when we maybe start winning, maybe that changes a bit.
That's the ace up the sleeve, right? That's what you hope, yeah.
Yeah, I think it does change if you start winning, for sure it does. But, I mean, and the point Rick Ralph makes is all these no trades, when you have like 10 teams, you have to name those 10 teams July 1st. That's how the CBA works. So a lot of these guys sit down and pick their 10 teams, and they look at the teams that didn't make the playoffs last year or don't look good. Like, I would presume this July 1st, Winnipeg's still going to be on a lot of players' lists, but it's not going to be number one. Because if I'm an NHL player, I don't want to go to Phoenix right now. As nice as Phoenix is and everything that's going on, they don't have a head coach. They're gutting the team. There's no direction there right now other than a very long, long process. I would think that teams like that, or maybe even Colorado, are put on the list more so than a Winnipeg.
I'll take that. If you're offering that up as a bet, you want to go an extra large Tim's coffee on that, I'll jump all over that.
So if you're a free agent this summer and you have to choose on your no-trade list between Phoenix and Winnipeg, you're going to put Winnipeg ahead of Phoenix?
Because I think you're asking a Winnipeg boy. I can't answer that. Well, and I don't believe in it anyway.
Think of it as a player who wants to win a Stanley Cup. Who's closer?
Well, I don't know that that's going to be the overriding factor here. You're talking about palm trees and all the rest of it, right? And I don't myself have a problem with Winnipeg. You know, I was talking to a guy not so long ago who is saying, when you arrive, if you're from this province or city, and the bus arrives here and they're going from the airport to the Fairmont where they all stay, that whole drive is just torturous with the guys coming at you teasing you the whole time that this is where you're from. Right, so I would think that Winnipeg is still going to be the coldest, the smallest, all the rest of it. Even if they're winning, they're still going to have a tough time getting guys here until they really get to a level that's fantastic.
It's going to take a playoff run, I think, for that to change, for them to kind of drop out of that number one spot. Because even with Edmonton, when they got McDavid, they were still one or two until he kind of officially broke out and teams were like, okay, we got a chance to play with this kid? Yeah, maybe I'll suck it up for a couple of months in the winter to pull that off. The Jets should be there where, like, they should have a team that could go a round or two at least, but until they prove that, they're just an organization that hasn't won a playoff game since they returned here.
So if you're July 1st is Saturday, your agent comes to you as a player and says you need to put these teams in order of your no trade by July 1st, and it's Colorado, Phoenix, and Winnipeg going into next year. How do you list them?
Well, if I have a 5-team no trade list, I'll put all three on.
Well, no, I'm saying forget the number of lists or whatever. Say you have to put these in a pecking order on Saturday. Colorado Avalanche, who finished dead last in the league, the Phoenix Coyotes, or Arizona Coyotes, and Winnipeg. List those in order for me on your no trade.
Yeah, I mean, I'm also a Winnipeg boy, so it's a little hard for me to try. But, I mean, if I'm looking at it objectively.
Well, as a hockey player, I sit there and I look and I'm like, I don't want to go to Colorado next year.
Yeah,
I don't want to go to Arizona next year. No. And just as a hockey player.
What if you save the pile of money from taxes going to both of those cities?
Well, that'll weigh into it as well. That's what I'm saying, right? And I'm not saying Winnipeg. And I said, as a hockey player, I think Winnipeg's got something going on of those three teams. Now, you sit down and factor in taxes. I got to see what my wife or girlfriend says, where she wants to spend, you know, while I'm away on a 2-week trip. All that weighs into it. But as a hockey player, if I have to list on Saturday, my number one team is in Winnipeg.
Well, it doesn't need to be number one, JT. It needs to be whatever minimal. Like, there's no player out there that only has a one team, no move clause sort of thing. They've all got multiple. And so long as there's a handful of teams on a guy's list, Winnipeg's going to be there for a while. And until it gets out of that list, it'll be there for an extended period of time, right? It might be that the Jets start to win and get into the playoffs for a couple of years, but it's still going to be reported at the end of that season that the Jets are one of the top five teams for the no-move list and all the rest of it.
Here's an interesting on Twitter from Motown Curmudgeon.
Do you think the NHLPA would give up guaranteed contracts and no move clauses if the owners took away the salary cap? I don't like that idea because every league needs a salary cap in my mind.
Yeah, I agree 100% that you need the salary cap.
It's, but would they trade, do you think?
I wonder.
I mean, the guaranteed contracts, I don't know if their owners are ever going to be able to wrestle that one away. But the no trade, no move, I wonder if you put the Olympics on the table, back on the table again, if you could maybe wrestle away the no trade, no move.
No chance in hell. No way, man. Hell no.
Here's make as much money as you can. Well, you can.
And I don't think, you know what, crank up the salary cap, make it 10 bill, or don't have a salary cap, right? Because that's essentially because there's infinite, limitless salary cap potential. But if I don't have a guaranteed contract, it means the same thing as in the CFL. And you know what my contract is worth in the CFL? That's right there. Done, gone. Bam.
Yeah, but the difference also is you're not making – no one's making even $500,000 in the CFL.
No, but that's even more painful. My contract is what? I got a five-year, $20 million contract that's not guaranteed. I play 1 year, and then what? If it's not guaranteed, man, it ain't worth crap.
We said no props.
The guaranteed contract is an amazing thing that the players will never, ever, ever – they will not play for 2 years if they got to protect that guaranteed contract status.
Well, yeah.
It's an insane thing to have.
Well, I'll flip you this way. Should the CFL have guaranteed contracts because they're not very big?
No.
And if a guy
no
gets cut in week seven –
No pro league should have guaranteed contracts. I don't think any – that's crazy got guaranteed contracts. I think it's crazy in a type of work that is completely based on production and results. I'm going to get an 8-year guaranteed contract. Say what?
Yeah, but every industry is based on that. If you have a contract here, it's based on results. And if they want to get rid of you, the contract is valid.
Sure, but I can't. I have a lot of trouble in certain situations comparing pro sports to the rest of society and employment. I just think there's too many differences that are inherent in both. You could have the zero salary cap or the guaranteed cut. No way.
We've had a couple of people on Twitter also weigh in with the idea of what about limiting the number of no moves you could have on a team, like two per team or five per team.
So just the elitist get them, right?
Yeah, I wonder how you'd work that out.
It wouldn't work.
I don't know if it would cripple you even a little bit more, wouldn't it? Because then you're sitting there going, well, I can't take this guy because I already got two. Or I want this guy, but then I have to move one of the two guys I already have on no moves. Like, I think it actually
creates more
problems.
Yo, Sid, can we get your no move?
Problems. Yeah.
That ain't going to work, man. That just creates – you know what? That creates a further – I mean, things are far enough right now as far as the upper class of the NHL and the middle class dying, wilting away here. And with all these – like the lower – like the guys that aren't going to get – like contracts like what we're seeing here with McDavid will add to those guys not getting signed till super late, $1 million deals. Like all of that stuff is going to continue to grow in how much they're utilized and depended on by teams when you get the separation going on right now.
I wonder if Connor gets a no move in his contract. 8-year, 13-something per. Does he get a full
move?
Is
there something more than a no move?
Yeah, yeah. Like, what else?
Like a stake of the franchise or something? Like whatever's
the city,
above that.
Bronze statue. There's going to be a list of things included in that.
Very interesting. Thanks for the tweets, by the way. Lots of stuff coming in on Twitter. We're trying to get to them all. Dom also says about the potential to sign somebody other than a left-handed D or a veteran on free agency for the Jets. Is why not? If it improves the team, why wouldn't you do that?
A fair point to make, sure. But how about we – I think the majority of Jets fans would like to see Chevy and the Jets focus on the areas that need the very most addressing and help, and that would be strengthening and deepening the decor and adding help for Connor Hellebuck.
We'll get to our next call on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290 in just a minute, but Jared also wants to ask Brandon if you would trade Tyler Myers in a first-rounder to get Provorov, the left-handed D out of Philly. Ivan Provorov, the former weekend.
No, thank you.
From which standpoint? From the Jets
from
the
Philly standpoint? He's their Jacob Trouba. So I'm not going to take a
first-rounder and Tyler
guy that
Myers.
Can't stay healthy.
Yeah, I'm not going to take an injury, I don't know, ravage, but a guy that has
riddled.
Had trouble to stay on the ice and probably a mid-round pick for what Philly would hope is their Norris Trophy candidate of the future.
That's what I told them you would say, by the way. Who's next on the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290?
Mike.
Mike, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. Just heard that comment. Kovarov's not leaving Philly, so tell people to leave him alone. The other thing is, and I said this last week, these guaranteed contracts are no trade. They got to go. But the guaranteed contracts should never be there, as well as no trade, no movement. But escrow needs to disappear to get some leeway on some of this stuff, to be a limited trade or limited no movement if they're going to keep it there. Like this Saturday, the Jets are in the same boat as they are every year and going to be until that removes. You will not get players in Winnipeg. And if Elliott comes here, it's only because the interest on him will be minimal. And he'll take the Winnipeg deal because they're going to throw more money at him.
Well, the same could be said for the Detroit Red Wings till they started winning. And then players started taking pay cuts to go to Detroit.
Right,
but like it is a winning thing. I agree with you. This Saturday, they're going to have to overpay. That's what free agency is, and Winnipeg is where Winnipeg is. They have to start winning, and once they start winning, I think it'll change. I don't think it'll change drastically that you're still not going to want to play in California or Florida, or especially tax wise and everything else. But that's just the way it is.
I don't think too. I hear this often, where people compare it to Pittsburgh or compare it to Detroit. I don't know that you can compare that, though. Like, it's going to resemble that to some degree, but it's still Winnipeg and Canada and the taxes involved, right? So yeah, small town, sure. I don't know what the population of Detroit and its general surrounding area is. I would assume it's considered – I think considerably larger than what is here in Winnipeg, so it's still a considerably bigger city, and it's in America. Like, it's going to be – it'll change things here in Winnipeg, but it's not going to be, I don't think, similar to the examples of Pittsburgh and Detroit.
What are the taxes on 13.25 in Edmonton? What are you clearing after taxes? $2 million?
And the escrow thing, everyone has to deal with escrow. So how does that, I don't know how, removing that or not, how does that affect the whole coming to Winnipeg or not?
Appreciate the call, Mike. We have to take a break. We'll get to more of your calls and more of your texts next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Jim, Troy, and Brandon on The Big Show, TSN 1290, back with your calls and texts. Text 1290-90 with standard message rate supplying if you want to weigh in the conversation or give us a call on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290, just like Matt did. Matt, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Yeah, a couple questions. Does Brian Little have a no trade? And if he doesn't, wouldn't it be more sense moving him since his ceiling is come and gone and eventually he will be a diminishing asset? You can't plug a pro in there and meet all the players in the Jets. I get more for him than anyone else.
He's got a 14 no trade list.
Oh, he does.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're looking for a top four defenseman, wouldn't he be one of the better assets in the package?
I think you would get a higher value for Brian Little, but I wouldn't. If I would re-sign Brian Little. I think you need him.
Would you give him 5 years? Like, you're gonna have to. You're not going to get two or three. I don't think you keep him for two or three. Open market, he's probably going to get five, huh?
I think it depends on, well, if he goes to open market. I think if you approach him, you could get, it depends on what the annual salary is. If you want to go 3 years with Brian Little, you probably have to pay six.
Yeah, but they don't, when are the Jets, who does that? Who gives, inflates a number to keep a guy for fewer years? When do you ever see that? Yeah, I know you suggest that often, but when does that ever happen?
Well, it happens. If a guy gets term,
the Jets
he usually takes
that?
The term. But
my point is, Brian, like, if you anticipate that you're going to get term if you go to market, why would I give that term away? Like, why would I give that term away staying in Winnipeg?
All you have to do is look at the number of players they've re-signed before they went to market. The Jets do that all the time. The Jets sign guys without going to market.
And what kind of terms involved, though?
Well, it's
still 5 years, roughly. right? Like Wheeler's deal, yeah. Bufflin's deal. Yeah.
Bogosian, so, Kane.
But that just adds to the point here, JT. You're not going to be able to sign Brian Little to a three-year deal when the open market, he can fetch five. His negotiating process won't be that.
Well, he's 29 years old. I'd give him 5 years. You don't want Brian Little for 5 years?
I don't know. He's turning 30.
Yeah, I have no problem with that.
Gets a little dicey. It's
even more tougher now that McDavid's apparently going to be making $13 million a year, right? When you have Line A, Ehlers, Trouba, Morrissey, all in the next 4 years alone, right? Pulling in whatever cake they're going to be getting. A lot of it, I think, might depend on Jack Roslovic's progression this season. If he has a really, really good year, even if it's just in the AHL and he's at over a point a game down with the Moose, maybe I do look at my options in terms of not bringing Brian Little back. I don't know. I'm kind of hesitant to commit to 5 years automatically when there's going to be some more pressing needs for this team to lock up.
If that happens, well, what I do is I lock them up for 5 years, and then if Rossvik and those guys progress, I trade them. Like, who wouldn't want Brian Little at? That's why I think Perreault is at 4.1. There's a lot of teams that would like Perreault, and there's a lot of teams that would like him at that price. That's what I think the Jets do well, is they extend players and they extend them at very tradable money. Interesting on Brian Little, though. We appreciate all the calls and the tweets and the phone calls. Any final thoughts, gentlemen?
Final thoughts. Boy, the bar has been raised, and the way that the NHL adjusts to this now, once this happens with McDavid, is going to be remarkable to watch. And boy, the impact here in Winnipeg once the young fellas start to ante up.
8 year, 13.25 per for Connor McDavid is what's being reported out of Edmonton for his next contract.
Scheifele, 7 years left at 6.125. Cheers to Chevy right here. Cheers. Cheers, Chevy. Good job.
Provolov's on his way out of Philly, I hear.
We got a break now.
TSN 1290 is excited to return. I'm kidding about that if you just tuned in. TSN 1290 is excited to return to Assiniboia Downs for another Jocks and Jockeys night Wednesday, July the 5th, including dinner and a betting seminar, pop, free wager prizes, and the whole thing is hosted by us here and the TSN 1290 crew. The only catch is you have to win your way in. Keep listening for your chance to win invites all this week. And if you want more information, visit tsn1290.ca. 12th caller through, 780-1290. Gets four invites to that great evening. We're back tomorrow, and of course, we will have a full day of coverage starting once again at 11 with Rick Ralph and the Don Vito Roundtable of everything going on. On behalf of Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki, and myself, Jim Toth, we thank you for listening. We'll be back tomorrow morning at 6 on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.